Welcome back. It's the Kaufman Show on TSN 690 Radio. I'm Dave Kaufman. I'm joined by Jay Farrar, and we're here, and we're happy to be here. It's a bit of a messed up day, and we'll address it as, you know, we're not afraid to tackle the big topics here on the Kaufman Show. And the Habs loss is the least of our concerns right now. Good evening, Jay.
Sorry, there's okay. A button here, huh?
Yeah, and you got to press it still.
Yeah, well... The Habs loss is the least of our worries, but seems not everybody else. upset people tonight.
Listening to that, to the deluge of phone calls coming into the Habs postgame show shows that to some people this isn't just a game. And it's very interesting
to see. It's a lifestyle.
Yeah. It's very interesting to see, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It is. And I was rooting for the Flyers tonight.
Why?
I'll tell you why. This is a weird philosophy that I have. It's actually not that weird. It's got to do with, I guess, the layman's term for it would be the hockey gods.
Okay.
Get on a losing streak now.
Mm-hmm.
Get it out of your system.
Sure.
I hope they only win two of the next, what have they got, six remaining games? I hope they only win two of them. I'm like, yes. I was sitting next to Nick Murdocco, and I was like, yes. And he kept laughing because I would, yes. When Philly would score, and everybody's getting mad at me, you know, and I'm playing devil's advocate a little bit, obviously. But, you know, get it out of your system now. Let them lose now. Get on a good streak when the playoffs start.
Entropy. And again, I don't have much to say about it right now. I watched a bit of the game just to try and escape from the news tonight, because it hit a certain point where there was no more that you were going to learn from watching whatever news channel.
No, it is what it is. Yeah.
But, yeah, not the escape I was looking for when I turned on the Habs game, but
needless
to say, the last time that the Montreal Canadiens won the Stanley Cup, they backed into the playoffs. They were terrible. I want to say they won two out of their last 10, something atrocious like that.
Yes.
The team totally backed into the playoffs.
Yes.
And like you said, sometimes you got to get that losing streak out of the way.
Yes.
So
let the goalie suck. Let everybody suck. Yeah.
I'm with you on that. And in the meantime, we're going to get in touch with a few people tonight. We'll be joined in studio by Brian Wild.
Yes.
So you know we'll talk a little hockey, but you know Brian when he's on our show. We talk about whatever we feel.
Exactly.
We don't put any kind of restraints on Brian. We're going to try and get in touch with Mike Wendt, radio host down in Boston with WZLX. Wow, look at that. Brian Wild
walks in. Kind of ran in a little bit, didn't
he? Triumphantly.
Yes.
Hands
out. Looking good, too. Look at that tie.
Hi, Brian. Grab a seat. Make yourself at home.
With this one?
Sure. Sure. Unless you want to sit on Jay's lap, that would be the seat.
I'd have no problem with that, the way he's looking.
We're going to get you a headset. We're going to get your mic up. We're going to do all this.
Can you hear the words that I'm saying now?
I can sort of hear it through my headphones, so I imagine that everybody else is right along with us. We were just going back and forth, Brian, between the talking about a hockey game and talking about the real world and what happened today.
Yeah, I was wondering how that was going to go. I was actually going to tweet, and then I decided against it, that apparently I'm not allowed to come into the studio unless there's been a tragedy in the world, because the last time was Newtown.
It was. I don't know what's up with that.
I've spent a lot of the day hoping for something bizarre, because when something like this happens, there's this one side of you that thinks that you're – what's there to hope for? It's already done.
Mm-hmm.
And the world again seems messed up, and it doesn't seem as if hope is ever in the equation. But I've spent a lot of the day hoping that this is just one crazy man instead of an organization of crazy people. Because if it's just one crazy man, then we can maybe get out of this without another war or – some sort of action that the United States feels is necessary.
Well, we saw that in our province last fall, that it was, I mean, one crazy man allegedly tried to shoot the premier.
Mm-hmm. I remember that. And were you on the air that night again?
Mercifully not.
Okay.
No, I believe it was on a Tuesday that it happened, not a Monday. But again, because that wasn't a sect, a society, a group, it was...
We got out
allegedly
of
allegedly a crazy man. So we got out of that one.
Yeah.
This one, there's been a lot of this day where I've sat there crossing my fingers that this is a white man that did this. I'm serious.
Yeah.
I am dead serious that this
Why?
Is a white man. Because of the backlash if it isn't.
Really?
Sure. Sure.
I don't know. I never really thought about that.
That if it's, it doesn't matter if it's an American or not, if the guy doesn't look like you, Brian,
mm-hmm.
then...
Oh, I'm white.
Right.
Oh, yeah. You are so white. So white.
Jay, don't miss a beat, eh? Hey, good commercial, by the way.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're a hell of an actor.
Hey, not bad, not bad. Yeah. I'm working on it. Sergio's not.
No,
so it's
less
so, clear.
So than you. Yeah. Less so than you.
Jay,
but it's a good spot.
What were you paid for that ad?
What was I paid for that ad?
Same price as tonight.
The payment was fun, Dave.
Exactly.
Fun.
Just like, and yeah. you know what? You read it the same way just there.
You should talk to your agent about that one.
I should talk to my agent about that.
So, yeah, Brian, you know what? That is messed. I don't know if that's a sign of that we don't have you in often enough or if that's a sign that our world is crazy messed up right now. But it's true. The last time you were here, we sat with Francois Gagnon and debated about Newtown, and this race today was dedicated to the victims of Newtown. The 26th mile of the marathon was dedicated to the 26 victims who died at Newtown.
Being at the game tonight, I mean, most of my day was about hockey, and I focused on it as one is supposed to when they have a job. So I haven't spent much of my day thinking about it, but as I start to send my mind that way... my thoughts are that it doesn't feel extremely professional. I mean, when we thought that the JFK Library was involved, then that felt professional to me. It felt quite orchestrated. But as it is now, it's two homemade bombs dropped within 100 meters of each other to go off at a less than busy time in the race.
No, in fact, it was supposedly the busiest time.
No.
It wasn't the time when you're going to get the Kenyans, but it's the time when you're going to get the people, the average Joes that are finishing.
Wouldn't the start if of the race would be the busiest?
The start of the race would be the busiest.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, I mean, by a mile.
Yeah, this is clearly
the most
poorly planned. I mean,
not poorly. I wouldn't say poorly because...
It scared the hell out of everybody.
Yeah, and it
and that's the idea.
And, it, you know, there's a nation that's worried, and there are... over 100 injuries, and there are three dead, I think it is, and some that will need to have limbs amputated. So I don't know if I will go with poorly, but I would certainly suggest that it doesn't feel like Al-Qaeda.
No.
You know, because when they do it, it's... And even when they use that type of shrapnel, that type of bomb, that type of explosive bomb, when you compare it to something like Bali...
Mm-hmm.
You know, when they did Bali, it was in a vehicle.
Those were suicide bombings.
Yeah. Yes, they were, but they were in vehicles, too. And those vehicles, I mean, they were loaded. And I think the numbers of dead were 200-300
right,
people.
Right.
So that's their total when they finish.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And when Timothy McVeigh finished, what was his total?
It was a building.
Yeah.
It was a building.
And about 170 people.
Something like that. Yeah.
But, so... I mean, if this is Al-Qaeda, they've scaled it down quite a lot.
They have. And you know what? It smells... I mean, you can't make assumptions. It smells of domestic. It does. But, I mean, how can you say? And you know what? CNN was saying the same thing. And in the same sentence, she's like, listen, we don't want to make any assumptions about who are the culprits.
But here we go.
But in the next sentence, she mentions Al-Qaeda.
Right.
Right in the next sentence. You know?
Yeah.
And it's incredible. That's why I can't watch it.
Which is scary,
I turn it off.
You'd think we've learned from 9/11.
In what way?
To maybe go a little slower on certain things. To not...
How can you? How can you when they're...
You have to be responsible.
I think, as a journalist, you have
a responsibility.
They don't care. Journalists.
But
a
Dave,
bunch of models sitting behind a desk.
Dave,
that's what
everybody's
they are.
Mind goes there anyway. I mean, if you...
Yeah.
If you preface it with, obviously, we have no proof to send us in this direction, but this is speculation. I think when you start something with this is speculation, I think you really can send it where you want. I mean, that's what we're doing right now. We're making no apologies. How are we any different from CNN except for our audience is probably a couple people smaller. I know the ratings are down But
wait, you're talking about CNN's or ours?
CNN's yeah. Ears are up, baby. Ears are up.
Oh, listen, it is what it is.
I mean, the point is we're doing the exact same thing. I mean, obviously we can't criticize. We've mentioned Al-Qaeda just now, too. But we're speculating. They're speculating. I don't have a problem with it at all. Just the problem I have, moreover, is if somebody tries to develop a theory that's false.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That drives me crazy.
Yeah.
Just for the sake of ratings, just for the sake of having a larger audience. That I can't fathom or stomach.
Mm.
That's not what we're doing here. We're going on the safe side, frankly.
Oh, we're absolutely. I mean, you know, there's a difference between speculating that it isn't Al-Qaeda and speculating that it is.
Yes.
I think we're in.
Well, I think you'd have to be pretty stupid to speculate this is Al-Qaeda. Just from a point of view of understanding historically what they do and how they bring it compared to what
and
this is.
There'd probably be a video release by now.
Yeah.
You know? Claiming it, you know.
This happens every day all over the world.
All over the world.
And if this had happened today in Damascus with three
It
or,
probably
three
did.
It probably did. Or in Baghdad or in Karachi and all these places that we hear about it or
how about Mexico City?
Well, we read it, Brian, in
drug wars.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Sure.
It's happening all the time. And it's to cops.
All the time.
The cops in Mexico are getting overrun.
You hear of markets being bombed. You hear of hundreds dead. Frankly, this would have been a light day in Damascus.
Yeah.
And it's weird to think about it.
Yeah, we had
that
a good day today. Yeah, literally.
Which is so messed up.
It's incredible.
Up, Jay.
Yeah.
It's so messed
and
up.
And I'm not trying to undermine what happened today. It was bad. It was a tragedy.
It was terrible. It was terrifying.
Yeah.
But it's going to change the way that people look at marathons
public
events.
That's right. It's not the body count, it's the venue.
Right.
It's all about the venue, where you do it, and that makes people pose more questions about who did this. You know, when it's on your own soil, everybody's like, oh my God. The closer it is to you, the more people are fascinated by these attacks. When it happens in Pakistan, everybody's like, well, screw Pakistan. What do I care
right,
what happens
is,
there?
This is 5 hours down the road.
Yeah. So, there it is. You know, when it happens thousands of kilometers away, and to people who are a little bit darker than you, people tend to care a little less, which is natural. We're a tribalistic society, you know, but there are a lot worse things happening in the world. Again, I'm not undermining what happened. It was a tragedy. It was awful. It was terrible to look
There's
at.
There's nothing about what you're saying that sounds like you're undermining what happened today.
Good.
That's not the vibe I'm getting from you at all right now.
Okay, good.
But open your eyes. This happens every day all over the world.
Yes.
And
now it happened at the Boston Marathon, and it happened to Americans. It's a big venue.
And welcome to the club. And
yeah.
And it's scary to think about it that way because it changes the way that – and after 9/11, there was a bit of that, the fear going to your first sporting event.
Yes.
I don't know if you noticed anything with the crowd today, Brian. But
No, not at all.
Okay.
No.
How was the moment of silence?
Well, one idiot ruined it as usual.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Honestly, I'm not saying that idiot is good, but moment of silences are stupid. They're stupid.
Why?
It's a stupid thing to do.
Why?
It's a dumb thing. Everybody's going to sit around.
You felt that way ever since Yuppie stood in the middle of center ice for the Gary Carter moment of silence.
That might have jaded me a little bit.
Yeah.
That might, where he's shaking his head after Gary Carter died and Yuppie is in the middle with the spotlight on him with a red carpet coming out. Just going, oh, woe is me. Gary's dead. It was awful.
I found it very touching. Okay.
I know you did. No, a tribute is nice. It's nice to mention it. To say something, but you're having a 30-second moment of silence, which is tens of thousands of people in an arena. Yeah,
they couldn't even pull off 3 seconds.
No, I exactly.
Before the first guy goes, go Habs, go.
Yeah,
you can't even pull off three. You know, and it's funny too because I've seen a lot of these. I've heard a lot of them, and it used to be they tried for 30.
Yeah,
it was, and you know, a moment of silence used to be a moment was equated with a minute.
Yes.
There's, you know what? It would be a full Carey Price sucks.
Yeah.
If they tried a minute at the 30-second mark these days.
You have 20,000 people.
Can't even get close to it.
You have 20,000 and you're serving beer.
I think of the moment of silence they hit, they hoped for 5. They hit 3 before one guy went, oh, silence is uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I'm not used to silence.
Everybody look at me.
Go Habs, go. And then 40 people find that funny even though the other 21,000 are going, oh, please,
and that's why the
please
moment,
don't have an a-hole
moment
here
of silence.
Tonight. Oh, there's the a-hole. Thanks a lot.
Moment of silence is way too mature for 20,000 people where they're serving beer.
It's just not going to happen.
You
know what, though? I still think you got to attempt it.
No.
I agree. You have to.
You still have to
for
attempt
what
it.
Are you doing in this moment of silence? What are you accomplishing?
It's the same as any moment of silence.
You mention it, you say, reflect on it.
Since you were brought into the gym as a kid on Remembrance Day at school and told to be quiet for a minute and reflect. That's what it's supposed to be there for.
I don't need to be told when to be quiet and when to reflect. And I'm serious about that.
No, I know you are.
Anarchy at the Bell Center.
Yeah.
I'm J-Pub Radio and forget this.
Yeah, no, it's stupid.
I will not be silent. Hey, were you the guy that yelled, go Habs, go?
Yeah.
Well, you might have been.
No.
Sounds like you could have been.
No, maybe, no. It's as stupid as having national anthems at a hockey game. You're at a hockey game. You know what? Go home, watch CNN, reflect then. Do a little reading on the internet. Read some books, see why these things happen. That's reflecting. Having a moment, a forced moment of silence, does nothing. Does nothing for anybody.
I think it's important for communities to be able to grieve together and acknowledge
then let them.
Things together.
Everybody does it in their own way. Don't pretend.
How about a moment
like,
of silence? How's that work for you?
Well, I'll tell you, Jay, one of the things that people in Montreal are doing is organizing a run on the mountain on Sunday morning.
Okay.
If I had any respect for my body, I might join them. But I find it way more acceptable to stand in silence for a minute and in quiet contemplation than to go for some sort
but
of
But you're
run.
Not contemplating. There's too much buzz going on. There's too much flash. People, there's
so
20.
Says you.
There's a hockey game. You've got lights, you've got beer, you've got the big scoreboard. There's 20,000 people around you. Are you seriously really going to reflect? You're going to look into your very soul now and think about what happened today? Or are you going to go home, sit down, relax, read a few articles, then you're going to reflect on it?
I'll tell you, honestly.
It's all for show. It's dumb.
Personally, it's the kind of thing where something like this happens and my automatic reaction is to not go to the hockey game. I'd much rather sit home and watch the news and see what's happening in the real world.
On your own terms.
Yes.
On your own, not on the terms of the Montreal Canadiens organization.
And you know what? I'm thinking back now, and I have been to some very awkward moments of silence. I remember being at the Forum when they held a moment of silence when Harold Ballard died.
Oh, no.
Right. Right. And, needless to say.
Was there a go Habs go there, too?
It just wasn't very silent.
No.
It wasn't very silent. And, I get that it's not everybody's cup of tea, but in moments like this, people feel so powerless. And I think that part of it is wanting to be able to do something. And I know what you're going to say. I can see it. It's written. It's your eyes are saying it. I wish we were filming tonight. Because it's not really something. It's the way that you aren't a fan of thoughts and prayers, which I'm sure you've seen 1,000 times today on Twitter.
Another stupid thing. It's the dumbest. I'm sending my thoughts, and you're
enjoying the yin and yang show here.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Brian. I'm on a tear.
No, it's
tonight.
Okay. I gotta check Twitter.
Yeah, go ahead. My thoughts and prayers. Fine. Maybe the intention is good. Maybe the intention is, hey, look what I'm doing. I'm sending my thoughts and prayers. Isn't a prayer mostly a conversation between you and whatever deity you happen to believe in?
Sure.
So why the hell does the rest of Facebook have to know about it? If you're sending your thoughts and prayers, well, thoughts, for the most part, unless you're some sort of ESP-type guy, are private. They're within your own head. Prayers
know.
Are a conversation.
I think Twitter proves that thoughts are no longer private.
Yeah. Thanks, Nat.
Yeah. Prayer is a conversation with you.
Yes,
and
thank you, Nat.
Yeah.
Got a reply from Nat. Thanks, Nat.
Prayer is a conversation between you and whatever God you made up or you believe in or whatever. And,
hey,
and that's
Ian.
How it should stay. And that's
Sorry.
How it should
Brian.
Stay. Brian. Well, are we getting more tweets here?
I was just saying hi to Ian.
Brian, Brian, can we get a moment of silence, please?
Wow.
You used them all up.
I'm done. All right? I'm not trying to be the bad guy. I'm not trying to be devil's advocate.
How is it the bad guy?
Well, because people are going to come on now and say I'm a jerk or whatever.
Jay, people want to feel a part of something, and they just don't know how sometimes. That's all.
Well, that's too bad.
Like, for example,
no, but you need to feel a part of something in your way, and your way is to read some articles, reflect on your own, and do what you do.
Yeah.
But I don't – I wouldn't want myself – I wouldn't pass judgment on anyone's
– Process
to get there. Yours is one process. Dave's is another. Mine is another. Someone's is thoughts and prayers. If that's their process, that's their process.
But that's my point. It becomes.
What is your point
it becomes,
it's not okay for somebody to have a different process than you?
It's not about.
Somebody wants to get on Twitter and say my thoughts and prayers to the people in Boston?
It's about them.
No, it's not about them.
Yes, it
them.
Is. My thoughts
it's about
and my
them
prayers
processing
are with them. are with you.
It's about them processing.
Well, good for you. You know, well, good for
well,
you.
And
your
good
thoughts
for
and
you
prayers
too,
are,
then, Jay.
Are for them. Well, I'm not going to make a show out of it.
No, but
it's
I think
just,
the point
it's a
is
dumb
that,
thing.
The point is everybody gets to it in a different way.
And prayer
everyone
for a lot
copes
of people.
In a different way. Everyone tries to understand a moment in a different way.
Totally
everybody
understand
processes
that.
Things in different ways. To pass judgment on the way other people process things as inferior to the way you might process
I'm
them.
I'm not saying that.
Oh, well, come on, Jay.
I'm saying that not all of
you
these tweets.
You maybe didn't use the word inferior, but the implication is pretty
not
clear.
Not all of these tweets are about processing and coming to terms with what happened today. A lot of it is for show, and a lot of it is saying, hey, look at me. I'm sending out my thoughts and prayers. Like, where is your significance in the world that you're
what
sending
is,
out thoughts
what
and prayers?
What is the show do you think somebody is making when they do that?
It's
here's a little
social media is all about me.
Bob,
me. It's a self-advertisement for everybody. That's what it is. And when you're sending
well,
out
now,
your
now to me, it sounds like you're criticizing Twitter instead of somebody's process.
Well, I'm
and I'm okay
I'm criticizing
with that.
The people on
I'm
Twitter.
Okay with
some
that
of the
because
people
I would agree with
it's
that.
The public nature of it. I think that yeah. Jay takes issue with. I'm pretty sure you know Jay.
But that's how
that
a lot of
people
process.
If you're going to admonish
people
who the thoughts and prayers or the actual act of praying. I'm sure there are people that feel exactly the same disrespect for the way you feel, and that's what makes
absolutely.
That's what makes the world go round.
Yes,
there's. I mean, as long as we can all debate,
the advantage
openly
I have
honestly,
is that I have a microphone. But you know
right
what?
Right now you do. But yeah. Whoever wants to call in, we will happily talk to them. And if
sure.
They disagree with you, like Brian just did, then they'll have at you, mm-hmm. And we won't cut them off. 514-790-1690.
Well, some of them. No, not some of them?
No swears.
Okay.
No swears.
No swears?
That's the only rule.
No okay,
swears.
No swears.
Unless we're talking about the Habs, then
yeah.
I don't know how you don't swear.
No.
But
I just felt feel that it's kind of self-absorbed
well,
when,
this is,
when you
this
do
is
that.
This is a bigger
you know?
Issue, Jay. That gets into your views on religion.
No,
and,
it's not,
and,
it's not
and,
even
well,
about that.
In my
that.
Mind, that's what I hear when I say you say this. And
yeah.
Look, I'm not a religious person, but I do understand that a lot of people take great strength from and comfort from praying. Way more than I can comprehend. And I'll tell you, the only times I've ever really actually prayed is in like the worst, darkest moments. So my mom was in a coma 10 years ago,
yeah.
And that had me praying.
Yeah.
I don't think I've prayed since.
Yeah.
But
well, it's a comfort zone.
How'd that go,
it's a comfort
way.
Zone.
She's
that's
just
what,
fine. She's probably listening right
praying
now.
Praying is a comfort zone, and I agree with that. And I'll never put down anybody for praying or whatever they believe in. That's fine. Keep it to your damn self. That's all I'm saying.
Let's take a call. We in the middle of that rant, we did have a caller. So let's go to Anthony in Montreal on line one. You're on the Kaufman Show. Anthony, good evening.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. Just calling in for Jay. Jay, if people want to take a moment of silence, that's really up to them at the end of the day. And if
exactly.
20,000 people decide to do it and there's one moron in the crowd, that's completely fine. But you also have to take into account that the vast majority of that stadium was quiet
yep.
And took the time to actually... You know, be quiet and pay their respects. And, you know, at the end of the day, we don't all know the people who were in Boston, or we don't all know the people, or we don't all know Gary Carter. But at the same time, we decided to take that moment. And that was the only moment that we might take to be quiet and respect that individual. So I think you saying that it's stupid is ignorant, my friend. And that's really all I have to say.
Thanks for the call, Anthony. We appreciate you listening.
I shall respond.
If you want, Jay.
I have no problem with people taking moments of silence. It's when it becomes a spectacle and they're told to. And everybody says, oh, yeah, okay, we're supposed to do that. I'm telling
well,
you, half
that
of that crowd.
All the time,
half
that
of
happens
the,
all
to.
The time.
Half of the crowd are sitting there and they're
told to. It
wasn't looking
like you
around.
Had to have spinach or anything.
No.
Jeez, you were just asked to shut up for 5 seconds.
You
on.
Were asked to shut
told
up. For, why
to.
Do you have to be asked? Why
well,
does it have to
because,
be that way?
Because a lot
it's just
of
a public spectacle.
Because
that's all
a
it
lot
is.
Of people would like to honor something in that moment.
A lot of people would.
And they did.
And
you know, like,
half of them
like
are looking around waiting for the guy who's going to yell out.
You know
out.
What? I was at the game. I think the caller spoke very well on that.
I guess you guys have more faith
no, it has
in
nothing,
the public than I do.
No. Why would yeah. it have to be about that?
I don't know.
I mean, I was there in that moment, and the caller is right. There was one idiot after about 3, 4, 5 seconds. But it was, before that moment, a surprisingly awesome amount of silence.
You know
for a
I've,
Bell Center crowd.
You know what's blown
and
me
so
away?
And so it resonated. And when it resonates like that for that moment, you say to yourself, look, something touched society as a mm-hmm. whole today. And you can feel warmth in that. And you can feel a bond in that. And that's what this is. when I hold up my phone, because all I do on it is Twitter. It is that bond, mm-hmm. and it is a me exercise.
That's
sometimes.
Exactly. That's
but
the problem
let me finish.
I have. Yes.
Let me finish. And it is a me exercise a lot of the times, but it's also a bond exercise with humanity a lot of the times, too. And when it is that better self, Twitter, it's an amazing thing. And when it is that worse self, what you're talking about, where everybody's so focused on the selfish idea that they need to get to you no matter what, or the fight they need to pick with you so they feel smart, it's a pain in the ass. But when it's good, it's amazing. And that's the equation I can make in that common bond that everybody felt today when they were holding that moment of silence for as long as it did last.
We've seen those moments of silence in Montreal before.
Sure.
And we've seen them done respectfully. Again, one bad apple shouldn't necessarily
spoil
the bunch.
No, and that's why he spoke well, that caller. He
Absolutely.
Spoke well. Because it was one bad apple, and there was
Except
a lot of...
Except for the ignorant part. Yeah,
and there
like
was
that.
And there was a lot of honoring before that moment
And that's
hit.
Fine. No problem with that. It just... It's hard
and
for me to
was
explain.
Forced. Nobody was forced.
Well, it, hold on,
nobody
Brian.
Was
hold
forced.
On,
no,
hold on,
nobody
hold
was
on.
Forced.
If I may,
no, come
if
on.
I may, gentlemen.
Yes. You know, but you know why I say forced? Because
Maybe
you're
I
using forced as if somebody at the end of it had one less limb or
no guns were put to people's heads.
No,
if that's what
I
you're
mean,
trying
all,
to say.
All
you'd
that
be,
happened.
Be socially ousted if you had yelled "Go Habs, go!" during it. You know.
Well, yeah, of course, because all you were asked to do, Jay, if I asked you right now to be quiet for 5 seconds because I wanted to talk to Dave, would you say, oh, Brian, there's no way I'm going to let you force me to be quiet for 5 seconds?
At best, it's being polite. That's what it's being. I know. I, you know what? I can only speak for myself.
Like somebody shot you because you had to wait 5 seconds.
I'm not that mad about it. I just said it was a stupid exercise. I'm not that angry about it.
I find it very weird that this is what we're getting bogged down in right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I know. We should. Yeah,
really,
we've
honestly,
gone off in a
let's
tangent.
Let's move forward.
That's my own fault. I take responsibility for
no,
that.
No. It's fine. It's just that there are so many more important things
sure.
to discuss right now.
Exactly.
Get us back on the rails, Kaufman. Get us back
with,
on the
with
rails.
With silence, you can't discuss it.
So the first thing we're going to do is remind everybody that we're listening to The Kaufman Show. You can follow me on Twitter or send me a message at The Kaufman Show. Jay, my lovely, talented co-host, much maligned right now, but lovely and talented,
yeah.
is at Jay Pub Radio. Brian Wild is in studio from CTV News. Be Wild with an E, CTV. Correct?
Say so.
All right. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Travis in North Carolina, our friend out in Asheville.
Oh, this was a great caller in Newtown night. Hey, Travis, how are you?
I'm doing well. It's kind of a bad night, but as good as you can be, I guess.
That's
understood.
We're just trying to talk through it. I mean, we can talk about the fact that Carey Price stunk tonight, but I think he'll be just fine, and I think there are more important fish to fry.
I would be inclined to agree.
Good.
And, I have to say, I don't actually disagree with Jay too much. I don't want to say his characteristic slight lack of tact once in a while, but
that's fine. That's why we like him. It's
indeed.
It's his libertarian way.
Yeah, but
it is, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Hey, Rand Paul.
Oh man,
I'd say it's more that the moments of silence don't do a whole lot because the people that are affected by it aren't the kind of crazies that you have to worry about in general, you know?
What do you mean?
I mean that people who feel enough to reflect on things, people who feel enough to want to participate in moments of silence or to honor victims of stuff like this, aren't the kind of people making bombs.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah, it's all kumbaya for now, but in a week, nobody's going to give a damn. Believe me.
You see, but that's no. See, I disagree with that. I think that an event like this, it transcends. I mean, Newtown people cared about a week later.
This is
what?
Different.
What?
This
Say
is
it.
Different.
Why? Because it's not. There are children without limbs right now.
There are children blown apart by an assault weapon by one guy. I mean, it's a nightmare. And I know this is a nightmare as well. Again, I'm not undermining the situation. It was horrible.
Yeah, but you know what, Jay? I don't have kids. I couldn't put myself in that. I mean, I was.
I don't think you need
distraught.
To have kids.
No, but I was distraught that day.
Yeah.
But this one is a hell of a lot more relatable for me. I could have been there watching a friend of mine cross that line.
I don't even think it's close. But I mean, we can't compare tragedies. That's
well,
an exercise
yeah, my
in futility.
Is worse than yours.
Yeah, that's an exercise in futility. I mean, we can't really do that. But you know, it's I don't know. When they do these spectacles, the moment in silence and stuff like that, it becomes all about me, 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 me. And nobody's getting to the situation at hand. Nobody's care. You got to take this. I take things with an aggressive approach. I want to educate myself. I said, why do these things happen? Which part of the world are we ignoring? You know?
That's the thing, though, Jay. People aren't like you in general. People don't want to hear about it. They don't want to approach it. They don't want to be uncomfortable by it.
Yeah.
Thinking deeply into why there are crazy people or why there are terrorists is not fun.
No.
People don't like to watch war documentaries. People don't like to see these things, but they do. You have people on Twitter retweeting pictures of things, and people do that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't think about it.
No.
They use it as a, hey, that's some kind of visceral, psychological, hey, that's not me, you know, disgusting thrill, so to speak.
Something I find interesting, Travis, is the hesitation to use the word terror. When, to me, regardless of whether an Arab or a Jew put the bomb in the
seemed pretty terrifying
bin,
to me.
It does, exactly.
Yeah.
And the word terrorism itself has been hijacked, which I find just so weird. So weird.
I mean, that's the thing. Is that people? Even I did it, by accident. It's become a deeply ingrained semantical thing here. Where, on some level, no one's going to accuse Timothy McVeigh of being a sane person, but some people somehow discriminate domestic terrorists. And even though there's a word, domestic terrorist.
Well, some people think he's a patriot.
Yes. Well,
really?
We don't talk to those people.
Sure.
Wow.
Sure. There is the militia sect, Brian. In the United States, thinks that Timothy McVeigh is a patriot.
Martyrdom.
Yeah. Well, once the state killed him, yeah.
Yeah.
But
wow.
But that whole side of the U.S. exists. The government's going to throw us over. And again, I said to you before, I'm really hoping it's a white guy.
Yeah, me too.
And it's a weird thing to say, isn't it?
Well, it is.
To watch that and go, oh, God, I really hope that wasn't an Arab. I really hope it wasn't, because it opens up all the wounds from 12 years ago. It really does.
And there's an entire subset of people. I mean, I didn't see it personally. I came here a little bit late to where I am. But where I am is one of the places where the Atlanta Olympics bomber.
Rudolph.
Bombed things. Yeah, he bombed things here. And he had his trial here.
He bombed things. He bombed abortion clinics there.
Yes, he did.
Right.
And
to be clear.
There are some people who had next to their, I'm imagining, next to their Confederate flag bumper stickers. They had "Run, Rudy, Run."
Wow.
Bumper stickers. So it exists. That mindset exists.
Meanwhile, the poor guy who they pinned that bombing on at first in Atlanta.
Yeah. Mm.
Remember that? The security guard.
Yeah, that poor guy.
That poor man. Security guard.
Don't forget Oklahoma City. How often was it a talk about of the video footage of the was an Arab guy walking around?
Oh, I don't remember that.
Yeah,
I don't remember that. Thankfully, that was 20 years ago.
Yep. Well, close enough.
It was. And I know that I read today that was on Patriots Day as well, and so was Waco.
Yeah, and so was Columbine around this time.
Around this time, yeah. April is the cruelest month, Travis. Thanks for the call.
Cheers.
We'll catch you soon. Let's go to our first guest of the evening. He's a radio host in Boston on WZLX. That's right, I said Z. His name is Mike Wendt, and we haven't seen him in our fair town a little while, but always enjoy it when we do. Mike, welcome to the show. Thanks for appearing with us tonight.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
How are you?
I'm all right. I'm all right. I was actually in your town a few weeks ago for the game.
Really?
Yeah.
You see, and that's one thing I've noticed is the animosity, we were talking about, just certain levels of decorum. And, I mean, one idiot at the game tonight started yelling during the moment of silence. But, frankly, if you look at Twitter on the average day, there is so much vitriol between your city and ours. And that's gone today, which is really, really refreshing. I was so terrified of seeing something anti-Boston, and it's not there.
Me too, yeah.
It's not there, and thank God.
And I mean, there's always those jackasses, though. That
right.
I mean, that's every town has their guy, and it's like that's our guy. Okay, we accept him for what he is, and he's the guy we're going to point to when all this crap goes down. And we need a bad guy to point at that guy right there.
Probably a good call.
Oh, I won't say that.
But it's been trying to say the least.
Yeah. What was your day like? Where were you near the bombing?
Luckily, I was not. I was here at the station. We were doing a broadcast, and I was running things back here. But my fiance was in the building. Like, she was three floors above the first blast.
Wow.
And, like, I didn't even know what happened. I was driving home. My biggest worry of the day was getting to the post office to mail my taxes in. You know, because it's the 15th and tax day. But yeah, she called as I was, you know, sitting down printing out my forms and all that stuff. And she called and says that she's all right. And I'm like, well, great. When are you coming home? She's like, no, turn on the news. We were there. I'm like,
oh, wow.
Jesus. And, yeah, they were literally three floors above the first explosion. And when it went off, they hit the fire escape. They went down. And luckily, she's fine. And she got out pretty much unscathed. And they found two girls laying down in an alley, just covered in blood, just a mess, shaken. They couldn't even stand up, so they picked them up. She put her in them in her truck, and drove them to the hospital before coming home. But it's that unknowing, like because I didn't hear from her after she called, and it's just that you sit and stare at the TV, and it's partially numb, partially angry, partially in shock. There's a lot of just, you know, disbelief. Like, you can't actually believe that this is happening.
So much of that is the I can't believe this is happening in my city.
Right, right. I mean, I remember 9/11 like it was yesterday, and I, you know, remember exactly where I was, what I was doing, and it's just like, this is so much different, and it's, you know, it's almost not comparable, because, I mean, that one was huge and catastrophic and just horrible. And, I mean, I guess, if there's a silver lining to be had, was that only two bombs went off. They found five more undetonated.
Yeah,
imagine.
It's been a hell of a lot worse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, there was one that they found undetonated under the bleachers right at the finish line with family. The family from Newtown was sitting there. I mean, it could have been a lot worse than it was. And I'm grateful that everybody I know that was there, and I knew people running in the race, all the radio stations had broadcasts right around the finish line, and I'm just grateful that everybody I know has been accounted for, and they've all. It's I say this all the time on my show. As awful of a place as the social media is, this is one of those instances because the cell service was disconnected in Boston, that it was the only place to find people.
Yeah, it has its moments, doesn't it?
It really does. It really does. It has its moments.
We're in conversation with Mike Wendt on The Kaufman Show. You can follow him on Twitter at Mike Wendt, W-E-N-D-T. He's a radio host on WZLX in Boston. Also the host of The Mike and Billy Show, which you can download off of iTunes. Mike, talk to us a bit about the Boston Marathon and what Patriots Day means in your town.
It's a huge day. It really is. And it's one of those unofficial holidays, really. The marathon, Patriots Day, is obviously official, but it's one of those days that's, you know, it's like taking St. Patrick's Day off here in Boston. Everybody takes off the marathon. Everybody goes down into the city, and you know, they have a good time. They do a whole lot of drinking, whole lot of fun, and it's a fun, festive environment, and it's one of those days that I feel really showcases the good in the city, you know. And it was literally like a perfect day. We had the Sox game in the afternoon. It was sunny. The marathon, everything seemed to be going well. You know, I was hoping we'd have a Bruins game later that night, and then obviously that got canceled. But it was on par to be a great day.
I think that was a good call, though, canceling that hockey game.
Absolutely, they couldn't have played that game. Especially, you don't want to just gather a crowd like that,
right?
You know, it's a safety concern, at the very least. It's a great day. Boston Marathon is always one of those days that, you know, there's not a lot of animosity in the city, and I mean, to see stuff like this, aside from the occasional consoling of my fiance, I barely said a few words today. And I just, because you can't really wrap your head around it. And I've tried very hard to not post even on social media, because I don't feel it's the right time to just start posting personal messages and stuff. It's like I was just trying to throw
numbers, you know, phone numbers, you know, hotlines. If you're looking for somebody, they're probably here or they're here. Look here. You know, information is more important right now than, you know, we should, you know, that anger. But I understand that, too, to a point.
Well, everybody manifests this stuff differently, right?
Right.
And I think the idea is to not lay blame or judge too much, because most of people's reactions are just whatever their gut is telling them to do.
Right. And it's a gut instinct to try to point fingers, but you don't know who to point fingers at right now. And people that are pointing fingers at somebody or some people, you just, I don't know how to put it into words. It's like, you don't know. So why are you trying to stir stuff up? You know,
There isn't much to say. It's I really appreciate you talking with us, Mike. I know that the emotions are running high.
Yeah, at least.
and I think one of the more difficult parts is just the, you know, for as much as we talked about the beauty of social media today, there was 5 minutes where everything happened, and then since then it's been speculation and discussion and what ifs and whodunits.
Right.
And you know, it's easier from here
and I love how
than
everybody
it is from
has
there.
A source now.
I'm sorry?
Everybody has a source now. You know, everybody from every news site to your neighbor. I got a source.
We're used to that, Mike.
Yeah, no kidding.
We're used to that.
Preaching to the choir here, friend. Yeah.
I mean, it's...
Yeah, but it's one thing when it's my source tells me that Andre Markov hurt his knee. It's another thing when it's my source is...
Yes.
And it's something like this.
They have the guy in custody. He's down here. Go get him. What?
Well, that's it. How many times did they arrest a Saudi Arabian today?
Oh, I know. Oh, my God.
You know?
That
leads to some seriously scary vigilante stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of, I think that's almost what they're going for. Is you know, well, I'm going to say this. It has no basis in fact. I'm not going to back it up with any claims. I'm just going to say it, put it out there, and hopefully it's, you know, people react. That I just, like you said, starting rumors about hockey is one thing. Starting rumors like this, in this situation like this, that's just a real crappy thing to do.
Yeah, for every major crime, at least one Saudi Arabian gets arrested.
Right, exactly.
You know, every single time. Right. Yeah, so there's a Middle Eastern man involved. You know, it's too bad.
It is, and it's...
Again, fingers crossed. I really hope it's
I really
some
hope
white
it's still
dude.
A white dude, yeah.
Yeah,
some
that,
angry...
Yeah.
Yeah. Mentally unstable white dude.
Yeah.
Couldn't qualify in the 3:30 time that was necessary.
Yeah.
And was
something
very
crazy.
Angry
yeah.
about that. How,
yeah.
how dare you not qualify me? I ran 3:31. And
you ruined his commute today with this marathon business.
Yeah, exactly. You never know.
You never know.
You never know.
Well, the point is, and I don't want to, you know, I hope you know that we're not trying to make light of it, Mike. It's.
I understand completely.
Okay.
I understand completely.
We
you
really
heck, I wasn't making light of that. I think it's actually possible.
Yeah. Oh, it is
I'm not making light
it's
of it. I think
possible.
It's actually possible.
Well, I hate
David Berkowitz killed people because a dog told him to.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, these things happen.
Well,
there's crazy in the world.
But there is a comfort factor in hoping that
that's
crazy.
That's exactly what
that's
it is. It makes you feel better.
Right. We want to feel better about this.
Because if it's a political movement, it's a hell of a lot scarier.
Well, that
Absolutely.
Makes next year's Patriots Day terrifying.
That's right.
And that's where and again, you know, when I use the word terrorist, it's
or July
just, 4th. It's someone that incites terror. They don't have to be.
They don't have to be Al-Qaeda. Right.
They don't have to be Muslim. They don't have to be anything. If you can feel terrorized, if you're being bullied, you could feel I mean, just the pure definition of the word.
Just because it's an
act to incite terror.
Doesn't mean
terror.
A war.
Right. It's to incite terror.
Right.
The word has been, and this is the wrong word to use, but the word has been hijacked.
Yeah.
It's, again, we speculate for comfort. I don't think that we speculate for. I mean, there are, I'm sure, people out there that are more hawkish than I that speculate for different reasons. But I guess a lot of people speculate out of hate.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
we're trying to do it out of comfort.
Definitely a lot of that. I think we just speculate to keep our minds moving. You know, like I said, I've just sat all day just staring at the TV, not even knowing what my thoughts are right now. And I mean, initially, my—I mean, like I said, my biggest concern was my fiance getting home.
Of course,
You know, that was my only concern. Whatever else happened, I would find out later. I knew that I was home. I wanted her home with me. And that was, at that very moment, my only concern. When she got home, it was just taking care of her, because it took a while, too, for her to process it. It took about, she was home, you know, for about 2 hours, and there was a lot of, like, just anger in her tone and a lot of confusion. And then you could tell when it hit, and it was just, I can't explain it. It was a look on her face I'd never seen before when it actually sunk in what had just happened to her. And it was heartbreaking, you know, because she, like I said, she was right there. And those are images you can never unsee.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, people with, you know, limbs missing, laying in just this awfulness.
Yeah, on Boylston Street.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That's, I mean, it's as unfathomable as, you know, it happening on Crescent Street or on Sherbrooke Street.
Right.
And when they show that overhead with the sidewalks stained with blood,
yeah,
I thought of Jerusalem or Tel Aviv.
Yeah.
But that doesn't happen here.
Exactly. This doesn't happen where I live. We live in a safe place.
Right.
At least that's what we've been, you know, led to believe.
Well, and again, and that's why we speculate that it was a madman, because it allows us to continue to think that we live in a safe place.
If it's an isolated incident, it's one person, great.
Yes, Brian.
What did Boston do collectively for most of the evening while I was at the hockey game tonight? Just watch television?
Pretty much, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as far as I know, we watched television and we were posting on Twitter.
Right. There weren't, like, people weren't
there was no
filling
vigil
up the bars
or
anything like that either.
Or
right?
Vigil or a place that they've gathered.
Well, there was a lot of, I mean,
I think there's still a fear of being out in, mm-hmm. in public
yeah,
places.
Right. I think there was
and they've
a lot
been
of
even instructed not to, right?
Yeah. I mean, they were all told, you know, if you don't have to be out, don't be out. It was one of those types of situations, you know. The whole chunk of the city was taken over by, you know, the FBI and the police and all that stuff. All, you know, Boylston Street's a crime scene right now. So it's like, just go home, be with your families. And I think a lot of it was, you know, for those of them that were looking for runners, were, you know, the runners were looking for their bags and their stuff like that. It was a lot of organizing more than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
How have your leaders shown their mettle?
What's that?
How have your leaders shown their mettle? Their mettle. M-E-T-T-L-E.
I think it's just trying to keep everybody calm
mm-hmm.
at this point, more than anything else.
Yeah, whenever I saw Deval Patrick on TV today, he seemed very calm. I didn't see anything of Mayor Menino.
I saw him on TV once. He was in a wheelchair. He's not well.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's not in
great shape.
I was actually really relieved that Deval was speaking for him.
Sorry, I was actually very impressed that within seconds after the explosion happened, the police and some of the National Guard guys that were there were right on it. They were already ripping.
Yeah.
I'm literally talking
seconds.
8-9 seconds
yeah.
after it happened. They, well, with no concern of their own safety, they didn't run away. They're ripping down that metal fence.
This was
trying to get
was,
at
that
people.
Was pointed out to me earlier in the day as well. That because it was at the finish line and there were so many first responders at the scene, that definitely cut down on the casualties.
Oh, I could imagine.
Well, that's just it. If it you know, as you hate to say, you know, I'm glad it happened there.
Well, yeah, as compared to happening somewhere else.
No, but that's an excellent point.
Right there.
That's an excellent point. And that's another reason to kind of feel as if it didn't have that professional feel to it.
Unless, and again, it's speculating, but unless the second blast was coordinated and to maximize the damage on the people arriving on the scene.
No, I'm just suggesting that from a point of view of when you have a Boston Marathon, you're going to have a lot of people there that are administering and can
first aid
oh, because marathons are dangerous.
Yeah. Right.
The heart is extended. The body is extended. So you have medical personnel right there at the finish line. And therefore, it doesn't seem like a logical place to, if you are, I don't want to use the word professional there. It seems wrong to use the word professional there. Experienced at that type of behavior, you're going to look for vulnerabilities,
mm-hmm.
not where people may be attended to as quickly
right.
as possible.
That's
and
what
security, too.
And not only that, a second bomb went off 10 seconds after.
That's it.
And none of these guys budged.
Yeah.
None of them moved. Nobody started running away in a mass panic like you see in the movies.
They ran towards it.
They ran towards it.
It's pretty awesome.
Those videos were amazing to see. It's just a testament to people right now. And even, I mean, just not even
not even the police or the military people, but just regular
people, everyday Joes.
That just veered off track and went towards it.
Yeah. Right, the stories of the runners who kept running to the hospital to donate blood.
Yep, exactly.
The human spirit, as much as it's taxed at times, can just be an amazing thing to watch in a moment of challenge.
Mike
like
went,
that.
Mike, I hope you know that whatever issues our cities have, they are cast aside. They are quickly cast aside, and that, you know, when you guys wear black and yellow or, you know, red, white, and blue for your Patriots or blue, white, and black for your Red Sox, and we wear our red, white, and blue for our Habs and Alouettes and Impact, it doesn't mean anything at the end of the day. And this is much bigger, and we're all friends, and we're all part of a big community here.
I 100% agree.
So we are thinking about you, and we wish you all the best. And
thank you very much.
We'll get down there soon and spend some money in your city.
Absolutely.
And hopefully we'll see you up here soon, or maybe even during the playoffs.
Hey, if we play during the playoffs, you will be seeing me there.
And if we play during the playoffs, we promise to keep it nice.
No. Come on.
Jay?
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Mike.
I'm straighten him out there, because I'm not promising to keep anything nice.
Yeah. Well, in the arena, we ain't keeping it nice.
Nope.
In the arena, I'm just suggesting you don't wear
adult beverages after, we
that's
will.
Right. Well, that's it. Yeah. And you know that. I'm not suggesting you wear your jersey to the Bell Center. I'm saying afterwards I'll buy you a beer.
Well, that's the thing. Inside, jersey's on. I know game's over, go back to the hotel, change into normal clothes, and resume my normal life. But in there, I'm a different person.
Yeah.
Mike, thank you so much for your time tonight. Hope everything is okay, and I hope your fiance's all right.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much, guys.
Have a good night.
Cheers, mate.
Take care, buddy.
There he goes. Mike Wendt, radio host on WZLX in Boston, host of the Mike and Billy podcast. Follow him on Twitter at Mike Wendt. Gentlemen, yes, Mr. Wild.
Habs for a second?
Absolutely.
Sure.
Ryan White as an in-person with Brendan Shanahan. And the way this works is...
Wow.
If you
get on a plane and go down to New York.
Right. And as a suspension goes, if it's over the phone, there's a maximum that can be allowed. And if it's in person, there is a maximum that can be allowed. So the number is 5. So because he is meeting in person, they can extend that to as high as 5 and beyond 5. And they couldn't go to 5 if it were on a phone. Thus, leaving that number probably, or they wouldn't bother with him to go in person at 5 for that. So, yes, it was a dirty hit, but I always go back, and I just tweeted it, I always go back to Zdeno Chara getting 0 on Max Pacioretty and then balancing it off against what Ryan White did tonight facing a possibility of 5 or more. It is astounding to me. It will always be astounding to me. And not because Zdeno Chara did what he did in that moment, but because the puck was by the goalie.
Yeah.
That's the thing that amazes me. That Tuukka Rask, who was the goaler that night, was the possessor of that puck when Max Pacioretty got turnbuckled. That will always be the part.
So
I
you're thinking because he's going to meet in person, he'll get the minimum of 5.
Yep.
Is it you
or they won't bother? Why would they bother to say? Come
I don't know. He's a young kid. His first suspension. Maybe they want to drill it into his head. He might have a long career in the NHL.
No,
they wouldn't care about that.
No,
why
they
care?
That's not Shanahan's MO.
No, of course it's not.
It wouldn't.
Why would you care about that?
No, it doesn't work that way.
No.
He's not in the union anymore, Jay.
It doesn't work that way. They want to see him in person so they can give him 5.
Why is it, Brian, that when the hit happened, social media said this is the last we'll see of Ryan White? Is it just is the team fed up or the fans just fed up with...
They just thought that it was just another...
it kind of is, isn't it?
God.
Yeah, he's had a tough year in that area for sure. And they just thought that is the proverbial last... straw that broke the camel's back in that one.
We've got to take a break, and then we're going to be joined by Dan Barton from the Rage Against the Marlins. He was kicked out of Marlins Park last week and has started a national media campaign. Not a big fan of Mr. Jeff Loria. We'll get back to this. Brian, I don't know if you want to stick around for that or if you want to go home. We've got about a half an hour left in the show. We'll spend a few minutes with Dan, and then if you want, we can wrap it up, the three of us. I just want to very quickly read a letter that I got tonight. A friend of mine named Johnny, who's in Boston, sent a few of us an email, and I didn't ask him permission, but I'm going to share it with you. We're all okay down here. I was at work, and Ariella and the kids watched in Newton. They were at home with the at the time of the blast. Stephen, Maggie, and Zoe, they're all okay, too. I don't know much more than you guys at this point. Local coverage is wall-to-wall, but plenty of unconfirmed statements everywhere, so I stopped following. The problem in this age of Twitter is that information now spreads instantaneously, and I think people expect stories to move forward as quickly as new info can be shared, but without anything new to report, the media just fills up with chatter. That aside, Marathon Day is the best day of the year in Boston. No question about it. Spring is in the air, there's a good buzz in the city, and all weekend. And the Red Sox play a game at 11 a.m. while runners file right past Fenway Park. Back Bay is a madhouse with cheering crowds, drunk college kids, and out-of-towners enjoying the city and cheering on their friends who've qualified for a historic race. It's normally impossible to go out for dinner the nights before and after the marathon since all the runners and families have infested the city. It's kind of like F1 weekend in Montreal, but with less Euro trash and more strange-fitting athletic gear. Not to put it down at all, I love the energy it brings. Now that I live in the burbs, it's a different kind of fun. With families and kids, they line the streets where there aren't any gates between the fans and the runners. Kids draw chalk pictures and messages to encourage the runners all the way into the city. And since it's a holiday, the kids are out of school. There's so much youthful energy that when I got home from work, the neighbor's kids were playing in the street, and I was told that they hadn't taken off their bike helmets since 10 a.m. that morning. Now these people, whoever that did this, not only and most importantly ruined people's lives with the death and severe injuries, and apparently the number of children hurt is staggering. But this day will never be the same. I don't know for sure, but it's going to be bittersweet next year when Marathon Monday rolls around and the crowds will be smaller, suspicious, and surrounded by oppressive security. Another piece of innocence torn away from a community and probably a country. You're listening to The Kaufman Show. We'll be back. Welcome back to The Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar, Brian Wild joins us in studio tonight, and aren't we lucky? We are going to go to a guest. We're going to shift gears for a few minutes and talk some baseball, which we do on this show, and we do quite well. And not often that we get to speak to a kindred spirit, but that's sort of how I feel right now. Our next guest, his name is Dan Barton, and he started a Twitter account last week called Rat Marlins, R-A-T Marlins, Rage Against the Marlins. Dan's going to tell his story, and I'm going to prod him along with some questions along the way. But needless to say, this all started when Dan and a couple of his buddies went to the Marlins home opener last week at Marlins Park. Dan, welcome to the Kaufman Show.
Thanks for having me. How are you?
We're great. We really appreciate your time. And since I saw you saw this in the news last week, I thought, you know, this guy, he's dealing with Loria, and it's something that we've been through in this town. And I'd like to hear your story and what happened.
All right. So basically, me and my friend, right after the fire sale of our roster to Toronto. I thought it'd be a funny idea if we, I know you guys have been there, so
yeah.
I thought it'd be a funny idea if we made a shirt that said Marlins baseball helping other teams get better since 1998.
That's great. Now so, you had that shirt. There were a couple of other shirts as well at the, that you
we
guys
were
wearing.
I was wearing that shirt. There's some pictures on the internet, and then, the other shirts that we had made that my friends were wearing. Said F Jeff on them.
Right.
Now that the first shirt, the Marlins baseball shirt, actually spawned the idea for the website, which you know is RageAgainstTheMarlins.com or just RatMarlins.com, and it's basically just a place for disgruntled Marlins fans such as ourselves, or disgruntled old Expos fans, just anybody who wants to voice their disgust and displeasure towards Jeffrey Loria and what he's done to not just this town but others.
Which I imagine that for the most part you're getting Marlins fans, right?
We're getting a lot of Marlins fans, but we have had multiple Expos fans reach out to us as well.
Well, good. We're good.
Not surprising.
Yeah. Now you're a lifelong Marlins fan, right? You're in your mid 20s, I imagine.
Yeah, I'm 25 years old. I was at opening day in 1993. I was at the first ever playoff game against the Giants. My dad actually picked me up from school early, called me out of school, and took me to the game.
Nice.
In 97, I was at the Braves divisional game in 97 when Leivon Hernandez struck out 15, and I was at Game 7 in 97. And then, from there, I was at the 2003, all those playoff games. But, me and my friends, and especially my friend John Gardner, who I started the website with, we've been going to games our whole lives, and we've sat through multiple losing seasons and, a few good ones, fortunately. We've sat in the heat, the humidity, the rain. We're one of, 6,000, 7,000 people there. And, we've been through all that. So just to have Jeffrey Loria, you know, lie right to our faces as he did and get a publicly funded stadium that he now owns, you know, it just really upset us. So we decided to go down to the game on opening the Marlins home opener. It wasn't the actual opening day.
Right.
And we wore our shirts and we had a sign that said "Free the Marlins." And we walked up to the stadium, and as soon as we walked into the concourse, there was a few local reporters, Dave Hyde from the Sun Sentinel and Joe Capozzi from the Palm Beach Post, and they saw our sign and our shirts, and you know they approached us and they started interviewing us. And just about 2 minutes into the interview, I noticed a cop, a Miami-Dade police officer, come up and stand, you know, right over my shoulder and start talking on his radio.
That's never a sketchy feeling, eh?
Yeah, right. So, you know, another minute goes by, and he's talking on his radio, and he leans in and very abruptly interrupts me and Mr. Hyde in our interview and says something along the lines of, "Are we almost finished here?" You know, me and Mr. Hyde were taken aback by this. You know, it was kind of out of place. So we finished our interview with the reporters, and we started walking towards our seats. And right away, I noticed that Marlin security, he wasn't marked. He was in a black polo, black slacks, but I saw him talking on a walkie-talkie.
Mm-hmm.
Secret Service. Marlin Secret Service.
Yeah, Loria's Goon Squad. So we start walking to our seats, and he stops us, you know, after a couple hundred feet. We're walking around the outfield concourse, and he says that he's worried that our sign is going to obstruct people's sight line once we're in our seat, which just seemed like a ridiculous claim to us since we hadn't even reached our seats yet.
Well, so, and the amount of people that would be sitting behind you in those seats.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah, not to mention the fact that everyone else has a sign. So, and I actually read an article in the newspaper saying that there were many signs that were much more vulgar than ours that made it through the entire game.
Yeah, but you were talking to the press, Dan.
That's exactly what happened.
Right.
So we continue walking another. We told him that wouldn't be a problem. We continue walking another 200 feet, approaching our section, and a Miami-Dade police officer stops us, and he says, "I need you to wait right here." And you know, 2 seconds later, of course, you know, four more police officers walk up behind us and surround us, and we said, "Well, what have we done wrong? We just want to go to our seats. We want to watch the game," because it was about the second inning that we got there after we sat in traffic trying to get there, because we drove down to Miami from Fort Lauderdale, as we've always driven from Fort Lauderdale. So they said, "We don't know, but we have to keep you here." They said, I'm guessing the Marlins, wanted us to stay right there. They were detaining us. We said, "Look, we'll turn our shirts inside out. We'll give you the sign. We just want to go to our seats and watch the game." They said, "No, they want you to stay right here. A Marlins representative is going to come talk to you." So about 10 minutes goes by, give or take. No representative shows up. And the cops motion us and tell us to come with them. And they lead us down a flight of stairs. And we're thinking we're going to speak with the Marlins representative. And ends up, they lead us down the flight of stairs and show us the exit door. And because, unbelievable, right? So because it was just the beginning of the third inning, and, you know, true Miami fashion, the fans are still trickling in.
You're getting booted.
The exit doors weren't even set up for people to leave yet, so we had to walk back through the grain of the turnstiles through fans that were still coming into the game.
Oh, man.
Now, and David Sampson's, see, what happened is
Mini-Me.
Yeah,
that's what we call them in Montreal, Mini-Me.
Well, they released a statement the next day, and they accused you of either being tipsy and or refusing to show identification, right?
Yes, one of their big points was that we refused to show identification, and as per their standard operating code, we were asked to leave. However, that's a complete falsity, because we were never asked for identification. We were detained and told we were going to talk to a Marlins representative. Then they kicked us out. You know, it wasn't until we were actually outside the stadium, standing on the sidewalk, that we started to walk away, and they said, "Wait, hold on, come back here. We need your names. Let us see your IDs." So, you know, we were already kicked out. So at that point, of course, you know, we declined. Like, what, is Loria going to put us on his blacklist? You know, you don't need my ID. So we walked back to the car, and I emailed Mr. Hyde from the Sun Sentinel, who had previously interviewed us. I said, "Hey, it's the guys that you just talked to. We're at Marlins, guys, Rage Against the Marlins, and we just got kicked out of the game." So we're driving on 995 North, heading back to Fort Lauderdale, and we get a phone call, and it's Mr. Hyde. So he asked us what happened. You know, he was very upset about it. And Mr. Hyde and Joe Capozzi from the Palm Beach Post actually, you know, go as far as on talk radio shows down here or even in their articles that they wrote about it, is saying that while we were around them, we weren't being unruly at all. We weren't doing anything wrong. We weren't drunk, you know, because Samson did say that, you know, sometimes when fans drink too much, you know, they cause a disturbance, because besides the ID claim, which was false, he also claimed that we were causing a disturbance later in the game and making some noise.
Whereas you hadn't even made it to your seats yet.
Yeah, we hadn't even made it to our seats. It wasn't later in the game, David. You kicked us out in the third inning.
See, and it's just... No, continue, right, please.
It's just, you know, this ownership group, Gloria Samson, they just lie to your face with no remorse.
Huh.
And, you know, it's basically with the thought of, what are you going to do, call me on it? You know, so it's just, it's ridiculous. And it's gotten to the point where it's just irritating to listen to.
Well, Dan, before we move on to what has happened since, and the story has gone national, and I know that you have legal representation now, I want to just go back a bit to, and not even to 2003, because, I mean, he bought the team and then you won the World Series, and there would be very little way to look at that and think that anything bad was on the horizon. But what I want to know is...
That one thing I will say is that roster he inherited.
Yes.
The roster that won the World Series, he only brought in one or two guys. It was really an inherited roster. But I'm sorry, please continue.
No, that's fine. What I wanted to know was how you felt about this new ballpark and all the money that was going into the team this time last year and the hiring of Ozzy and all these things. Were you sold up the river like we kind of were in 2000 or in 1999?
My good friend who I started the website with, he was always, you know, a big supporter of Loria when I would doubt him and say, this guy is a baseball guy. He wants to win. You know, he just needs a new stadium. Then he'll spend the money because he'll have the revenue. So, you know, and as you want to believe it. That's
the problem.
Of course. As a fan, you want to believe that it's true. So it's easy to believe, even if in the back of your mind, you know, it sounds like complete BS.
So how do you reconcile still being a Marlins fan?
You know, I don't dislike the Marlins. I love the Florida Marlins. Miami Marlins.
Right.
They need to always be the Florida Marlins. In fact, I have yet to buy anything Miami Marlins and still wear.
Why would you want those fast food restaurant uniforms?
I know, and the orange and black, I mean, it looks like we're trick-or-treating.
The big M on the hat. Get me a cheeseburger, please.
Yeah, you know that was part of the deal, since Miami paid for it. So,
right.
So we were willing. We said, you know what, all right, if we got to look like we're trick-or-treating in these ridiculous uniforms and we got to endure this and that, we got to drive further south down into, you know, Little Havana, you know, where the traffic's really bad at rush hour, because the old stadium was easy to get to, you know, and it was closer. But, you know, if that's what it takes for us to have a winning team, then so be it, you know. But obviously that was never Jeffrey Loria's plan. You know, from what I understand, the TV contract that Major League Baseball is renewing next year in 2014 is worth double what the current TV contract is worth. Although after they see the Marlins ratings from this year, hopefully they'll renegotiate with Loria on that one. And not to mention the revenue sharing that all the owners get from the league every year. I read an article earlier tonight that said, you know, since 2006 or from like 2006 to 2009, Loria had like $300 in revenue sharing. You know, where did that money go? You're sitting here telling us that you can't afford to run the team because people aren't coming to the games. You really expect me to believe that you make your money from ticket sales?
Well, we know now that that's not the truth. We know that teams don't have to sell at their stadiums. I mean, Deadspin pretty much proved that a couple of years ago, right?
Yeah, they did leak those financial documents. That was pretty great. Actually, today, someone tweeted me today. I don't know if you guys heard this or not, but for opening day, the Marlins were selling tickets on Groupon.
Yeah. Yeah, which was how 34,000 people showed up opening day. Now, what's kind of weird actually tonight is that the Marlins outdrew the Blue Jays. I don't know what to say about that. But
still second to last in the league this season in attendance. Only Cleveland has worse attendance than the Miami Marlins.
They've only won two ball games, right?
Right.
I mean, the team is atrocious. It's and we've all been there. It's very hard to go and support
we've
a team
been there, yeah.
when you hate the ownership, when you don't want to line their pockets. You, like, I know, Dan, that when you went to the opening game, I read somewhere that you bought your tickets from a scalper, right?
Yeah, well, actually, there was five of us, and four of us got kicked out. One of us, I forgot to bring his shirt out, the FTF shirt. I left it at home, so he wasn't marked. And
he got away.
He didn't get kicked out with us, but, of course, he had to leave because he drove with us. But no, there was five of us.
That's a good friend.
He said, what happened? We got kicked out. He's like, well, should I leave? I said, I don't know. Do you want to ride home?
Oh, man.
Anyway, yeah, there was five of us, and we got two tickets free from a friend, and the other three we got from a scalper because there was no way we were walking up to that box office and putting money in Jeffrey Lurie's pocket. And, you know, we also parked off-site. I don't know if you guys know this. The Marlins Stadium is where the old Orange Bowl used to be. So a lot of the parking there is just right in someone's front yard.
Oh, so there's a way to park without it lining their pockets.
Yeah, the old Orange Bowl when the Hurricanes used to play, and even out the Marlins, you know, it's right smack dab in the middle of a residential area in Little Havana in Miami. So, you know, you walk one block off of the stadium property, and you're in the neighborhood. So the residents there sell parking in their front yard.
Cool. What do they get?
For the Hurricanes games, you know, $50 if you don't want to get blocked in.
Oh, wow.
For the Marlins game, we parked for $10.
Okay. It's like Ivor Wynn, Brian. It's a messed up situation, Dan. And frankly, everything you're saying just rings so it's so familiar. When I heard it last week,
it's not surprised.
It rang so familiar. Yeah. And you know, as much animosity as Montrealers have towards the Marlins ownership, I think that I can say in full confidence that we feel nothing but empathy for the fans.
Absolutely.
Yes, Brian.
How do you see it ending?
How do I see what ending?
Loria, the Marlins.
Loria? Well,
do you ever see a moment it ends like it ended for us?
I don't, as far as him moving the team, no.
Not with a new park.
The park contractually, they have to be there for 30 years.
Hmm.
That's one good part about it.
How about fan-wise, how do you see that ending? How about team-wise, how do you see that ending?
Team-wise, I mean, hopefully there's some fans left.
Right.
You know, Marlins fans always get criticized as being bad baseball fans, but if you look back at what we've been through, you know, we're not bad baseball fans.
Well, it's crazy to think that you've had
by a team this long.
Right.
We're good baseball fans.
It blows my mind, Dan, to think you guys have had two winning seasons, and both those years you've won the World Series.
Yeah. Well, there was 2 years under Freddy Gonzalez where we finished like 2 games over 500, but we weren't anywhere near the playoffs.
Okay.
So, yeah, in my mind, two winning seasons. Also.
So two playoff seasons, and both those seasons you won the World Series.
That's pretty fortunate. And I'd like to thank Steve Bartman for one of those.
Wow, we have found the one person.
He's hiding out in Europe, isn't he, or something like that?
I don't know. Steve Barton is my hero.
I remember when Jeb Bush offered him clemency in Florida.
Yeah, well, South Florida Hotel started reaching out to him and offering him solace in one of their rooms.
Unbelievable.
I had a chat with Moises Alou once over a couple of beers about that situation. Not happy. Not,
well,
I don't know what that guy was doing, man. He's so upset. Still to this day.
That's my ball.
Yeah.
So, Dan, before we finish up, I just want to get up to date as to where we are now. You've hired a lawyer, and from what I gathered, one of those big-time Florida, you see the commercial-type lawyers.
Actually,
you know, anybody who's been down to Florida, you know that the lawyers will advertise on the bus sides, and it doesn't happen like that here. But you got, like, a fairly famous name, I think, right?
Yeah, he's a really good lawyer. His name's Andrew Parker Felix. He's with Morgan & Morgan in Orlando. And, you know, he represented us. He's a contact of the Marlins. We're still waiting to hear back from them.
Well, because the Marlins initially reached out to you, right? They sent you guys a tweet.
Yeah, which I thought was kind of humorous. we still have yet to hear back from them.
What are you expecting to hear?
I wasn't really expecting to hear anything. I don't really know what they could say that, you know, what are they going to say? They're sorry for what, kicking us out of the game? I mean, there's a lot more to apologize than that is. So, you know, what are we going to do? I don't really think there's anything they can say to me that's going to change my mind. We want change to happen. We want Jeffrey Loria out of here. And I don't know if you guys saw the Outside the Lines on ESPN on yesterday, on Sunday. But they talked about how if Jeffrey Loria contractually in the stadium deal, if he sells a team this year, the city gets 7.5% of the profit. Now, that's on a sliding scale. So next year that goes down to like 5%. The year after that, you know, around 3%. So Jeffrey Loria can just continue to funnel money through revenue sharing and other things and owning the stadium outright and then sell the team and move on. And, you know, hopefully he doesn't do this to someone else. You know, furthermore, they said that there's $2 billion worth of debt that's going to be accumulated from the loans the city of Miami had to take out to build, to pay for the stadium.
Right.
Now, that $2 billion is supposed to be paid for through the hotel and tourist tax. Now, the mayor of Miami was an outside the line saying if the hotel and tourism tax fails to raise enough money to pay for that $2 billion over the next 30 years, whatever that comes out to a year, then it'll be up to the general fund to pay for it, meaning the taxpayers of Miami who already funded the stadium will get things such as property tax raised to help pay for it once more.
Hoodwinked.
Just unbelievable.
Completely hoodwinked.
Dude, sue the crap out of them, man. Go McDonald's coffee on their ass. Do that.
Coffee's too hot.
Dan, it's a testament to you and your friends that you're still Marlins fans, and I think that's very admirable.
Yeah, good for you, man. Support your team.
We really appreciate that. Oh, one thing my friend wanted me to ask you guys.
Yeah.
So did the Expos fans, did you guys become Blue Jays fans or Nationals fans?
Red Sox.
I'm neither for me.
Really?
Yeah, I still don't have a team. I watch more baseball than I ever did.
A lot of Red Sox.
Red Sox mostly.
Red Sox, I would say.
Because of Pedro.
Because of Pedro and the proximity
of
Boston.
And the location.
Location.
And the
closest city with a major league team.
Hold on, there's another reason. There's another reason.
We hate Toronto.
3 weeks after the Expos were dead, the Red Sox won the World Series. And it was very convenient and easy for a lot of people here to replace that sadness with some sort of joy, especially when...
Whatever.
You know what, Brian? You're the hockey guy. I'll defer to you on hockey. I'm the baseball guy. You defer to me on baseball. Pedro Martinez he dedicated, as soon as he won, he said, I want to dedicate this championship, this ring, to the people of Montreal. Orlando Cabrera was traded from the Expos in that, that crazy three-way... with Minkiewicz going, I think, one way, and Alex Gonzalez coming to Montreal, another guy who you must love.
Yeah.
Isn't he the reason that whole inning started?
Well, no, that he actually had that ground ball error after Moises Alou threw the temper tantrum in left field.
And it was Gonzalez's first error of the season. He was the best defensive shortstop in baseball that year.
We opened it up.
The stars aligned for you, Dan.
They did. If I could say one more thing, guys, I forgot. You know, all of this really boils down to the fact that all the owners, or most of the owners, a lot of them, and Bud Selig are all in cahoots together. Because, you know, the Major League Baseball supplies the amount of franchises that are available, you know, and so they control everything. So basically the commissioner works for the owners. And there's plenty of pictures you'll see of Bud Selig and Jeffrey Loria. They're buddy-buddy. Because it's very convenient that Jeffrey Loria sells the Expos to Major League Baseball.
On a loan. He didn't have the money. He got a loan for it.
Yes. So he gets the Expos. Or the Major League Baseball gets the Expos from him. Then John Henry, who claims he doesn't have enough money to run the Marlins, sells the Marlins.
Right, but he can buy the Red Sox.
And then he buys the Red Sox for $600 million. After sells the Marlins for $130. Like, if that wasn't a backhanded, hands-in-the-pocket deal, I don't know what is.
Yeah, and it's amazing how we stay quiet when we still benefit from those deals, and then when we see that we get screwed from them, we shout from the heavens. But
yeah, that's just the way it is.
It is. It's the way it is, man. And if we had a chance to keep our team, I'm sure we would have closed our eyes to a whole lot of BS. I'm sure we would have.
I really feel for you guys, because I can tell you're just as passionate about baseball as I am, and I really don't know what I would do if my Marlins left. It was bad enough we had to change the name from Florida to Miami and change the uniforms, and it's bad enough we're dealing with what this is, but at least we still have our team. I really do feel for you guys.
Dan, I appreciate that, and I hope that you can hold your head up high. This RAT, RageAgainstTheMarlins.com, and at RatMarlins on Twitter, I really like what you've been doing, and I want to thank you again for this. We spoke for way longer than I expected tonight, but we needed this tonight. We needed to have a little bit of a, maybe not happy, but you know what I mean.
Lighten it up a little.
It needs to be brought to light, and we really, really appreciate you guys reaching out to us. We appreciate the support, and we're gonna stick to our guns, and we're gonna keep making some noise until something changes for the better.
Keep the faith,
because
brother.
He's not just bad for the Marlins; he's bad for baseball as a whole.
That's right. And look, anything we can do to help you get that word out, you let us know. And in the meantime, we are rooting you on from up here.
All right, we really appreciate it, guys. We'll be in touch.
Solidarity and hatred, man.
Dan Barton is the voice of Rage Against the Marlins, rageagainstthemarlins.com, at Rat Marlins on Twitter. Thanks so much, Dan.
Thank you, guys.
Have a good night. See, ladies and gentlemen of Montreal, there are some good Marlins fans out there. They exist.
Yeah.
They're fighting the good fight, and we got to stand up for that.
Yeah, it's not even he's not a Marlins fan. He's a baseball fan, and he cares about the sport, you know. Otherwise, you know. He doesn't even want to pay for the parking, but he still wants to see the game.
That's it. Yeah. And doing anything he can to not line their pockets.
Yeah.
I totally get it. Let's take a quick call from John in Montreal.
Is he still there?
I'd be shocked if he is, but that's amazing that he is. A testament to our wonderful callers here at TSN 690.
Yeah.
John has been on hold
gentlemen.
For a couple of days.
Hey, how are you?
How are you, John?
I'm doing well. I know it's getting real close to the end. Brian, I've always enjoyed your work. You're a consummate professional.
Oh, thank you very much. Appreciate
Maybe
that.
Maybe another time when we have more time, but you could tell them off air. Tell them the story about the time you did the live soccer game and you got the window slammed on your fingers.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, it's a good one.
I remember that. Yeah. We'll ask Brian. We're going to take a quick news update. John Kakalakis is going to bring us up to date on everything that's been going on in the world. After that, Brian will tell us a story. Did John just hang up? Are you still there, John? Wow, John. Okay, John wins caller of the year because John just sat on hold for an hour and a half
to tell Brian that you're a
pro.
I think he was a little pissed off. I can hear him grunting in the back. I think he was.
No, I think he wants.
We let go of him.
No,
I think he just wants to hear the story.
Right. We're gonna take a quick break. John's gonna give you a little update, and then we'll come back, tell a couple of stories, and call it an evening on the Kaufman Show.
The cream, the juniper, the cornflower and the chicory. Well, all of the words you said to me are still vibrating in my head. The elm, the ash and the linden tree, the dark and deep enchanted sea, the trembling moon and the stars unfurl. Oh, there she goes, my beautiful world. John Wilmot penned his poetry riddled with a past, and Nabokov wrote on index cards to the lectern in his socks. St. John of the Cross, he did a his best of it present in a box, and Johnny Fulmer's was half alive when he wrote Johnny.
We could let that play all night. That man knows how to build a song. Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds. It's Kaufman, Farrar, and Brian Wilde, who I want to keep you here, Brian. I like what you add to the show. It would be a lot of fun.
I wish this was television because the way he just looked at me is priceless. Priceless.
You want to keep me here?
We do. Yeah.
What's that all about?
Talk about the thing about forcing before. You know, forcing for moments of silence. I want to force you to stick around and be on the Kaufman
show.
He
wants it to be his little flower in the attic.
OJ.
Interesting.
Jay, I don't even know what that
is. Is that
means.
A Justin Bieber reference?
Flowers in the Attic. It was a book.
Aerosmith?
No, it was
no, that's toys. It was
about,
sorry.
It was about parents who had kept their children in an attic their entire life and locked them in there and not let them out.
Which is why I said, is this a Justin Bieber?
Am I the
reference?
Only one here who reads? Come on, guys.
I read, yeah. But I have not read that. Who wrote it?
I don't know.
from my high horse only 10 seconds ago, I admit I actually do not know the author.
Oh, God. Wild's been setting me straight all night, hasn't he?
For a third, I'll try this a third time to see if either of you bite. The reason I said Bieber, do you know why?
Yes.
You saw the controversy in the last couple of days?
Yes.
Why is it that Justin Bieber's taking so much flack for saying that he thought, wishes that Anne Frank, had she been alive, had been a Belieber? Why is that the biggest deal in the world? We know that John Lennon, 40 years ago, said that his band was bigger than Jesus.
Yes.
I feel like he caught less flack for that. I mean, maybe I'm wrong.
No, they're not burning Bieber records now and doing all that stuff. But you know why? Because, I mean, the kid is clearly stupid.
Well, clearly, and yeah. You know what? He's told what to think by all the people, yes, that surround him and tell him how wonderful and beautiful he is.
Yes.
At least on a Friday night in the Netherlands,
yes,
he wasn't with a hooker and he wasn't smoking dope.
That
he was
you know
at,
of.
Well, not yeah. when, at least not when he was at at least not when he was
you
at
don't
the
know
Anne
what
Frank
he
Museum,
did after
Brian.
He left Anne Frank's house.
Well, but at least he went to Anne Frank's house.
And two blocks to the right is the red light district.
Is it really?
You know
it's
what?
Not far. Yeah. It's not far. Man. And in between, in that 4 or 5 block walk, about 30 places to get hash.
Yeah.
Can we assume at least that while he was at the museum, he had one of his underlings out to get the hash for
Let's
him?
Just assume in the museum he behaved himself. Well, and then after that, probably not.
I just, again, I don't... It seems like much ado about nothing to me, and
no, he deserves everything he gets. Let them paste him. Who cares? You know
for what?
What? Because for being what? Stupid. For being stupid, Dave. I'm so sick of people being stupid.
That was Brian Wilde ripping paper, by the way. I don't know why.
People are Brian's stupid and the world is
it's
full
a metaphor
of people.
Excuse me?
I said people are stupid and the world is full of people.
You know what, Jay, it's time for a moment of silence.
Go Habs.
You're such an ass. Wow.
Oh, my God. See what I mean?
Like keeper of the
See
zoo
how stupid that was?
Yeah. Thoughtless.
Yeah.
Who?
But that's ignorant of
who
me.
Who came up with that in the first place? So, Brian.
Yeah.
Why did they slam your fingers down in the thing at the Impact game? Is that what happened? What? You pissed
man.
Off the owner or
I'm
something?
Not sure I know this story.
Really?
I just remember hearing the audio.
Oh, yes, I do know this story. This is great.
All right. I'll do it quickly. So Noel Butler and I are in Austin, Texas. We're covering a playoff game, and it's basically at this stadium that's old, decrepit, and not very A-League. It's a high school, in fact. There may be 200 people there, tops, at this playoff game, even though they're the first-place team. So the Impact played their first game at home, won it by 2-3 goals. Then early in the return leg of the series, they're up by 2 or 3, and I'm announcing it, and it's like 90 degrees in this what is basically no larger than a toilet doing the game. And there's Pat Vallée, the Impact, Noel and I, and the French media guys doing the game too. And so I'm doing the contest, and I've opened the window, and I'm announcing it, and the Impact score again, and I go, and it's 5-1, and there's no way in hell that the Aztecs are ever coming back in this series. This one, chalk it up, the Impact are moving on. And we're like 7 minutes into the game, and you have the fans, the 80 or 200 that are there, they're all turning around and going, what the hell? Because I'm just announcing it so loud and so exuberantly, and the owner of the team is so upset that his team's down 5-1 in this series. They were the first place team. He's so bothered by it, so angry. He goes from his seat, comes up to the broadcast booth.
Jeffrey Loria?
Yeah, right. Opens the door and pushes me back, pulls me from my shoulder, makes me sit back onto my chair, and if I didn't grab the window ledge, I would have fallen back and hit my head. So it was the only thing I could do to not hit my head. So I grabbed the ledge on the window just to survive this violent man so upset that his team has lost so badly, and I've just exuberantly yelled to everybody how much they suck. I grabbed the window ledge, and I'm like, oh, my God, thank God. That could have been terrible. I could have hit my head, concussion. Oh, it closed the window on my hand that I was basically holding on. And my fingers, like four fingers, are caught in the windowsill because he's closed the window on my hand. So this is how it sounds on the air. Oh. And then I look at Noel, like, are you going to help
me? What's Butler doing at this time?
He's just looking at me like, wow. And I said, I looked over and I said, who are you? And he goes, I'm the owner. And he walks out like, if you're the owner, it's okay. Right. You know, close the window on the fingers of that guy. It doesn't matter. You know, and then. So the rest of the game, we had to do with the window shut, if you can believe it.
Right.
And Noel takes over, and it's like, you know, the ball is out of bounds. It's like, what the hell happened here? And we regrouped, did the rest of the game, and nothing ever came of it.
How much of the game did you miss?
Oh, not much. Like 40 seconds, a minute and a half. Okay. I don't know. It wasn't long. But the funniest part, actually, after when I look back at it now, is I had this impersonation of, or a feeling, I should say. I had this feeling in the moment, like, oh my God, did I ever handle that courageously? I am, you know what I mean?
You had pride.
Yeah. It's like, my word, I'm so impressive how manly I was. I mean, I handled it like a pro. I didn't start swearing or anything, and, you know, and I didn't, you know, become bitter and stupid in the moment. I stayed controlled.
I would say you.
Good for me. Yeah, and then I listened to it after, and I was like, hey, who's that fairy calling the game? It just felt completely different in my mind in the moment as when I listened to the tape after, and I didn't seem controlled or manly. Or I just seemed like this little baby crying because his fingers were hurt.
I think I found it, Brian.
Mm. Oh, boy.
Well, that is very discouraging for the Aztecs. That is the worst possible start that
Listen,
they could
the
have
worst possible
ever seen
start.
In this contest. Only 4 minutes in, and ow.
Wait, there's more. We have a 90-second version, I think. Let's see.
Well, that is very discouraging for the Aztecs. That is the worst possible start that they could have ever seen in this contest. Only 4 minutes in.
That's him, him pushing.
Ow.
He did it twice. Did you hear the second
slam?
Sorry
about that. We just had some technical difficulties here.
My fingers.
We continue here now for Brian Wild. Austin have the ball. Take him out of the middle of the defense there. Johnson's got it out wide. Wasted ball going forward there
in the background.
From Austin. Throw on now for the impact. Middle of their own half, Adam Braz with...
What's going on with you right now? You're just in the back recovering?
All right, Noel, back here.
There he is.
There we go. An interesting moment here just transpired.
Just a shame we didn't have you on the webcam.
Just deciding how much I want to share. I think I'll err on the side of caution right now and speak with some people how public we want to make that moment. But anyway, let's carry on. The Austin Aztecs, certainly, as I was saying, that's the worst possible thing that could happen for that club. Down three.
Well, there you have it.
You start rubbing it in again, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Worst possible thing.
I see that this happened in November of 2010. Is that possible?
No.
No?
No, okay. That's just when the file was laid.
Oh, okay.
It would have been in late September of 2010.
Of 2010. Yeah. Okay. So we've let it lie dormant for long enough. I'm happy that we brought that out. We can thank the caller.
Well, you could hear that he did it twice. Hey?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally.
And he did it once, and I was hit. And then the second time he did it, he closed it again.
You composed yourself, but I wouldn't say it was manly, because I mean, if somebody slams a window on my hand, that's a fight for me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
I was...
Composure. Yeah. Held it together.
That part.
Yeah. But I'd like to see how you'd handle it, Jay, on air.
But I wouldn't care. I'd just disappear and Noel would be calling the game just like when it happened. But you'd be hearing, get off me! Get off me in the back! All kinds of things.
Well, everybody suggested I sue him.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I guess it was in the States. Well,
I don't think you're going to get much with 200 people at the game there, at the high school arena you're at. Yeah.
Suddenly, Brian Wilde's the owner of the Aztecs.
Yeah. The team's defunct. He's broke. He gives up his job in television.
Hey, Deborah, get through. We're moving.
Yeah. Becomes an alcoholic.
It's my baby.
All right. Well, we've got a couple of minutes left here on the Kaufman Show. We've really run the gamut this evening. And frankly, I think we should spend it talking about the most popular topic in the city, which is Carey Price. And
is it?
I think it is, unfortunately. Yeah. I listened to the TSN 690 Delmar Habs postgame show tonight.
That's all anybody was talking about?
It was, you know what? As you can see, I have a direct view of the board. Mm-hmm. I can see when people are calling and when the lines are full. And honestly, Habs win a game. The lines, usually you get one or two callers in a postgame show. It's not very busy.
Better radio when they lose.
When the wheels fall off. That's when people want to call in because everybody's an expert.
Yeah.
And
everybody likes to join the lynch mob.
The lines start ringing right now, Jimmy.
Well, you know,
I think
he's a great goalie, but
he's
struggling.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
But I think it's unrealistic to expect him to be in fine fighting form for 48 games.
True enough.
True enough.
But his save percentage
is league average and is
No. I mean his save percentage. The save percentage in his last two games is .727.
Yeah.
Okay.
.727. That's very, very.
Well,
I mean,
yeah,
even
he's been
when goalie
from two games. I mean,
even when goalies struggle, .850, .840, .727. But I mean, it's completely unlike him. And to suggest it is him is over emotional.
And,
I mean,
and you're talking about 11 goals in three periods, basically. I mean, he was pulled after the first.
Right.
50 minutes.
Yeah.
50 minutes. Two periods tonight, one.
Right.
And 10 minutes in the
and what's
Toronto
this
game.
Deal? What's this business about his pads? What is all this business?
That's breaking in new pads. It happens a lot. It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
It hasn't changed anything.
And
it's not a redesign of a pad
and
that he doesn't
them in
understand.
And they break them in Brassard during the day, too, don't they, Brian?
Yeah.
Well, apparently
sure,
nobody saw any footage of him wearing those pads in practice.
Okay.
So that's becoming a deal
pull
now.
Pull out the Zapruder film and let's
really
analyze
it. Back
this.
And to the left.
Thank you.
You know what I mean? Unbelievable. And that's what I was saying. I said, well, you know what? If the pads weren't doing well for him, and they were bothering him, maybe he would take it off, which furthered the conspiracy theory when people are saying, well, what about his endorsement deal with CCM? How could he take them off? He's trying to break them in fast enough. This is where people are going with this.
I hate to say this, Jay, but just the fact that you know all this stuff. Like, I'm removed from this
I did
garbage.
Another radio show tonight.
I know. Jay is also a co-host on MontrealHockeyTalkRadio.com. And if you ever want to
uncensored.
Turn it on, you can hear Jay
you hear
swearing.
Me here, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Here Jay says boobies. There...
He
goes to
completely
town.
Different, yeah. So this is what the kind of garbage that I'm hearing all night. Everybody calm down.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody calm down. They're going to lose some games, and it's going to be good for you.
Right.
Losing games is good for you.
Brian, I know you weren't in Montreal at the time, but do you happen to remember what the record of the 92-93 Canadiens was when they backed into the playoffs? Because I'm pretty sure they were atrocious in their last 10-12 games of this
they
season.
They were. They were terrible.
And fell all the way to sixth.
Yeah.
And
nobody gave him a shot at all because of the way they finished.
And
they almost didn't turn it around in time in the series against Quebec, too.
That's right.
They
it
were
took
down.
An overtime goal from Kirk Muller, if
That's
I
right.
remember
And
correctly.
They were down a couple and looking just as gruesome as they finished the season and they turned it around. It's completely normal.
Yeah.
That being
the
said,
expectation that they're going to be amazing every night is one of the things that's going to drive everybody crazy, of course. That
I know it feels great for the fans, but isn't it better to not be the favorites going into the playoffs?
No.
Isn't it better to not have that extra pressure?
Not really. I'd probably rather be the Chicago Blackhawks playing how they are.
Sure. Why not?
They're amazing.
Okay, the Blackhawks maybe, but the Blackhawks get to compete with the Cubs and the White Sox and the Bulls. And to a lesser extent, the Bears right now. The Habs are the only game in town. And if you're the Stanley Cup favorite as the Montreal Canadiens, that is an unbearable amount of pressure. Here we go. The Habs lost six of their last nine in 92-93 regular season. This is from Max the Guru out in San Fran. Every study suggests that no matter whether you come in strong or back in, it's completely random.
I agree.
So you want to be, you know, the Blackhawks, the concern was that they peaked too early with that massive winning streak.
But they're playing great now. And they did, after the massive winning streak, run into a bit of a lull. Every team's going to have a lull. I mean, the hardest thing covering the Montreal Canadiens this year, bizarre as it is, considering how terrible they were last year, the difficult challenge I face trying to keep my emotions in check and not feel any, really, is that the expectations have just ramped up so fast. Everybody went through the stages of grief last year, and the amount of people that would have said to me on the street or on Twitter or whatever, how long is the rebuild going to be? I think I could take 3 to 5 years.
Sure.
If it takes longer than that, I'm going to go crazy. Okay, well,
we're at 20 right now.
You know, we're not even a full season. We're a half season later because this one's only 48, and the rebuild is complete. Yet the impatience for a bad night. What happened to those people that were ready to put in 3 to 5 years of tough so they could really turn around instead of finishing eighth all the time? Because that was always the complaint. Oh, we always finish eighth all the time, and it's first. Why don't we just let it all blow up, fall apart, start all over? Okay, it did last year. Okay, how long do you have? I got 3 to 5 years in me. After that, I'm not going to be patient. All right? That's all
I
heard.
That's right.
Well, 3 to 5 years turned into about, what, 29 games?
Something like that.
Because by game 30, what's wrong with these bums? You know, and tonight, same thing. The expectations, they just ramp up so incredibly.
They're unrealistic, and they'll never change.
No, of course they won't.
They're unrealistic, and they'll never change. And we're part and parcel responsible for it.
Even the 1976.
It's 2 o'clock in the morning, and you can call us and talk hockey.
Yeah. Even the 1976, 77
Canadians
lost. Yeah,
but, you know, maybe,
lost.
But we would have talked Marlins, too, 20
sure.
minutes
ago.
Yeah.
Hey, man, we'll talk anything on this
show. It just happens to be when we're on.
That's right, Wayne. Let's take a call. We got Fred in Montreal. He's going to be our last call of the night on the Kauffman Show. Hello, Fred.
Yeah, just 2 points. Number one, the rebuild's been going on for 20 years.
That's what I just said.
Number two, I know the problem with Carey Price, his pads. I think if he switched to tampons, he'd be a better girl.
Oh, Fred. Fred, it's time to go to bed.
That's the kind of call you get at 2 a.m.
Time to go to bed, Fred. No, that's not true, Brian.
Oh, Fred.
Oh, and he's listening, too.
He's taking his applause.
Sleep tight, Fred.
Man, I was 2 minutes from being the biggest jerk off of the night. Thank God. Thank God.
Wow.
Thanks, Fred.
Fred, Jay's check is in the mail.
And if the rebuild has taken 20 years, it's in full fruition now.
Yeah, sure. I mean, look, 2010 was a blip, right?
The cup,
2010 was great.
The
but
cup
it was a blip.
Will be won in Montreal within 5 years.
Wow.
Wow. The wild man.
Yeah, but if it's any more than that, I'm done, Brian. I can't.
I can't.
It will be. The cup will be won right here.
If it's a six, yeah, well, just promise me that the Leafs won't win in the time before the Habs. That would be
no.
That would be catastrophic. I think people would. Then we'd have a lot of calls at 2 a.m.
I think it would
sure.
be more catastrophic if we won before them. I think that is way more catastrophic.
Really, I think that's just the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, that's just continuing. It's just history.
The tradition continues.
The tradition continues.
As you know, I go back to
consistent
what Carey Price said. All those years ago now, and when he had that terrible exhibition season. And I get that there's more
chill.
On the line right now, but
yeah.
chill. Because we are somewhat responsible. When he hears the Bronx cheer after saving a 45-footer.
It wasn't bad.
It doesn't make, well, yeah, because we all remember Patrick and the Bronx cheer that night.
That's
in December
how we lost our last goalie.
That's
Please
right.
don't do that again.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it's not a good feeling. It's not a good thing. And we don't want to be known as those fans in this city. We'd like to think that Montreal is a cosmopolitan and intelligent city and that, you know, calls that we just received that he should replace his pads with something else are, again, the bad apple. It's not everybody.
By the
it's
way,
not everybody.
Fred wasn't the first one to say that tonight.
No, I'm sure
it's
Fred
not,
wasn't. I'm sure
it's not
circulating
a new joke.
On Twitter. No,
yeah.
Well, and nor is it very funny.
Yeah.
But
he didn't even word it properly. That's the problem.
Are we really going to pick him apart for his delivery on the joke?
No.
Like you already...
It was a little Bieberish, wasn't it?
Again, you know what? And I don't know how to make that sound. I know we made it a joke before, but more people know who Anne Frank is now than last week.
Yeah.
So therefore, what he did wasn't the worst thing in the world.
All right.
That's how I feel about that, that there are a whole bunch of little kids out there that are believers, what a weird term, that learned who Anne Frank is.
Or resent Frank now because everybody got on top of Bieber because of it.
No.
I hope not.
I don't care about that Anne Frank thing. Wow. That's what's going to happen.
You are such a cynic.
That's what's going to happen. I don't care about that Anne Frank thing. I'm a believer. Man. I'm telling you. That's the kind of world we live in.
I hope you're wrong,
Jack. I hope so, too.
I hope you're wrong.
Back to Carey Price. He's an he's an excellent goalie going through a bit of a bad patch.
Sure.
It happens.
And the thing is, we see it in the way fans can't kid themselves. They can influence a player's psychological state.
Yeah, but you know what? He's...
I know he's tough. I know he's a thoroughbred and all the rest of that.
No,
I know
but he's
that.
Gone through that. That's his past now. This is not anything he's feeling from the maybe 200 people that Bronx cheered him or the pressure of the city when everybody comes up and says, what's wrong, Carey, right now? You're not playing very well.
What's that
you
like
gotta
after
think
the game? Like, was he available today?
No, he was not.
Is that normal that when a goalie doesn't...
Well, he got pulled. He would have been there if he didn't. If he completed the game, he would have come out.
Will you see him in Broussard tomorrow morning?
I will.
And will he be
probably
forthright?
Yeah. Well, will he say I'm struggling right now? Probably. Yeah. No, he's good that way. He's good that way. He comes out. He's honest with everybody. He's good. Sometimes his answers, when he plays poorly, get a little shorter.
Okay.
But that's okay. As long as he's out there, as long as he's facing the music.
I'm sure when you're having a bad day, your answers
absolutely.
At the dinner table are shorter, too.
No, he's very courageous. He's learned a lot. He's been in it. He could have easily just said, you know what? Forget this place. And he didn't. You know, he wants to win a championship here. I think he deserves a lot of credit. And I think a lot of people forget this is a very hard market to play in for a goalie. The spotlight is intense.
And we've seen goalies in markets a lot smaller than Montreal.
And who can't
crumble.
Handle it. And right. we've seen a lot of goalies here who can't handle this market. Even guys that you thought could be heroes here couldn't handle this market. He's got the, as he likes to say, steel balls about other people. Yeah. He's got them himself. And he's fine that way, and that has to be appreciated because that is a very special thing. There aren't a lot of people that have that kind of courage to be in the spotlight all the time, fail at times, still keep recovering, have a bad playoff, still keep recovering, keep moving forward, keep trying to stop pucks. I don't think it has to do with any of it. Right now what's happening to him is he's lost his form. You look at the goal from 40 feet, the second one, that's how a 9-year-old stops a puck, where you bounce onto your knees and you lift your stick. That's not how Carey Price stops the puck. Carey Price makes sure he's in the butterfly and he's got his stick on the ground. And with the paddle on the ground and in the butterfly, not seeing that shot and covering off the middle of the net, low and high, he makes that stop. And sure, there was traffic in front of him. And sure, the screen made it hard and that he didn't see it. But a good goalie knows you play the percentages, you block off the middle of the net, low and high, you go into the butterfly, you put the paddle down, you hope for the best. It's usually good enough.
So is this complacency?
No, it's not complacency at all. Sometimes you just lose your form. We all, you know baseball, right?
I'd like to think so.
Okay. What happens when a batter goes into a slump? Do you think he's complacent or he loses his form?
I think he's... going through a time. And
exactly. Baseball is the finest example of
sure.
that.
I think of pitching.
A little mental tick.
Exactly.
My mind goes to pitching, okay? I think of what Ricky Romero is going through right now, struggling in the minor leagues in the Blue Jays system after being the ace last year. And we had the Blue Jays general manager, Alex Anthopoulos, on the show 2 weeks ago. And I asked him, what kind of help is available? Because I know it's not just physical. There's so much of it is mental. It's that feeling you get on the golf course when you miss the two-footer. And then suddenly...
You don't think you can make a two-footer.
Suddenly, a foot and a half seems like 30 feet.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I know these guys get paid the big bucks, but they're still kids. And their minds are just as screwed up as ours are at 30, at 40, at 50, at 60. It doesn't matter. There is a vulnerability. There is a vulnerability to the human condition.
Absolutely.
And when you're put into this kind of pressure...
You lose your form.
Yes.
Everybody loses their form. I mean, I've been broadcasting for 30 years, and there are times when I'll get on the air And I'll wonder if the previous one that didn't go well, will it manifest in the next one not going well?
It's
the human condition.
We all do that.
So you only can go by the history of somebody and find that if you use that history, you have a pretty good example of whether that person can survive it and keep moving forward. And you realize that, of course, he will, because he's been doing that his entire life.
That's it. And the proof is in the pudding.
And he will this time, too.
What I hope is that these guys, and this is what I expressed with Anthopoulos, and his response was quite interesting, was I hope these guys get the help that they need. And Anthopoulos' response was that these guys are kids, and a lot of them don't take the help that they need. The help is there. It's everything they need is there, but you have to want it. And it's the lead
there's
a horse to water, right?
There's an ebb and flow in life, man. There's an ebb and flow. You have a great day, and that feeds on itself, and then you have another great day. And then that feeds on itself, and you have a third great day. And then by the seventh great day in a row, you're feeling pretty damn good about yourself, and then it starts to reverse because you feel so damn good about yourself that you forget what got you there. You forget the edge that got you there, and now you're maybe a little full of yourself. Now you're not trying as hard, and now that ebb and flow is sliding back down. And then you get rock bottom, and then you start realizing what was doing right for you when you were at the bottom, and then you start flowing back up again. There's an ebb and flow to life. We've all seen it in everything we do.
Yeah, you know.
In our relationships, in our batting stance, in our pitching, in our goaltending, in our shows. There's an ebb and flow.
There is. And there's yeah.
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
Brian is, I'm touched.
Sage advice from
he's a wise man.
No, but I mean,
that's what it is. It's as simple as that.
The best team in the world doesn't win 48 in a row.
No.
They don't do it.
And that's what I was saying about the 76-77 Canadians lost against the Golden Seals one night. And the city went nuts. They had six losses that year. One of them was against the Golden Seals.
And the city went crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's wrong with our Habs? These guys are bums. Trade this guy, trade that guy. He's no good.
Yeah, because everybody had $100 in the Habs that
The greatest hockey team of all time. And people were going nuts.
Hey, look, one of the reasons I love baseball so much is because it's so, so tied to heartbreak and failure.
Yeah.
Okay? The best baseball players in the world fail 7 out of 10 times.
That's right.
There's something very real life about that.
And the best team is 160.
There's 162 right? games. That's right. Look,
right.
It's
but
54.
The best team is 100 probably wins and 62 losses.
Right. Right. Yeah. Right.
Right. Makes the playoffs
the best,
generally.
That's it. The best
team,
win. Yeah.
Every team wins 54. Every team loses 54.
What do you do with the
other? Middle 54.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that's, the Houston Astros are terrible, but they'll still win 1 out of every 3 games.
Mm.
That's why you got to be damn careful if you're going to bet on baseball.
Yeah.
Or
the argument is over
matter.
The middle third.
That's right.
The argument's over the middle third.
So let Carey go through his ebb and flow, and let this team go through its ebb and flow, because they've had nothing but ebb for the entire season. Nobody saw this.
Yeah.
Nobody. I'm one of two people to predict a playoff spot that I know in this city, and I predicted him 8th.
Wow.
And the Rajon Tremblay went completely nuts and predicted the cup.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Wow.
He did.
Wow.
You have to. Yeah. You got to go against the grain, you know?
And he did.
Yeah.
And so nobody saw this coming. So here's your ebb for 40 games. And here comes the downside right now. I think they're in for a rough patch. I think it will continue in Pittsburgh, and they might even lose Tampa. And they might even fall to 5th. But even if all of those bad things happen, what an amazing year.
Oh,
they were 15th last year.
Oh, man. What lockout.
They sucked with a bullet to 2016.
Remember how pissed off people were that they weren't playing in October and November and December?
Sure. With Francois, where we were.
That's right.
Yeah.
People, myself included, talking about boycotting and how they didn't care.
Yeah, I knew you were wrong on that.
Yeah, well, because memories are short.
Yep.
And there's a
and that's a great thing, too.
Absolutely. It's what's going to allow people to go to the marathon next year in Boston.
Yep. And also, even more philosophical than that, I think it's actually some sort of kismet that as we get older, we lose our ability to remember as well as we did when we were younger. Because when we're older, we're asked to suffer a lot more than we have to when we're young. How's that philosophical?
When I I'm reading it's come across the wire now, a little bit more information about the boy that died today.
Go ahead.
He had left the stands to go hug his father as his father crossed the finish line, and then went back to the sidewalk to join his mom and his sister as the bomb went off. The boy was killed, and his sister's leg was blown off.
How old's the boy?
8.
Oh, my goodness.
And that's just one family. The mother was badly injured. It's, yeah, I don't know. I can hope that the older we get, the more mellow we get. Because, yeah, we got to deal with a lot of crap in this world.
Absolutely.
And what a wonderful thing it is that we get to escape by talking about sports. But there are nights
that was always my refuge.
There are nights, though, where the two tie in together. And there was a moment this afternoon when I saw that when this news was breaking where I went, I don't want to be on air tonight. I don't want to have to talk about the Habs when this is going on. And I don't know what I can say about this that's going to give it any kind of, you know, what can you say after everything that's been said? But as always, being in front of this microphone proves me wrong. And getting to speak to both of you in the studio and to Mike Wendt and a little bit of levity from Dan Barton, there's nowhere I'd rather be. Let's finish this off with a call from one of our favorites. We've got Mike in St. Leonard. Hello, sir.
Good evening, guys. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. David, perfect tone you said, as usual, for your show. Jay, you had me laughing before. And Brian, I've got to give you congratulations because you always ask some of the more thought-provoking questions in the scrum. Even this evening you did. You gave Michel Therrien a chance to vent a little, and he didn't take it. Fault. But the point you said and you brought up about making the playoffs and a little bit of mental fatigue after, to me, is totally valid in the way that they're playing. So congratulations to you. Keep asking those questions because the regular stuff that everyone else is asking is just driving me insane.
Amen, brother. Amen.
Thank you. I appreciate that. But there are a lot of good questions there, too.
You know, take the compliment. Don't be putting it on other people.
I'll take the compliment, but I'm surely not the only one.
Don't make me name names now.
No, I'm not going to, and I don't want you to. Okay, you know what? Deal. Thank you very much.
Exactly.
What's going on, Mike?
You know what? Not much. You know, the tone of the show, Dave, as usual, you said was amazing.
Thank you.
It's a strange day, of course, as usual, and a tough day. And those stories that come out are not going to make it any easier. I can't watch CNN anymore. I'm going to hurt Anderson Cooper if I have to see him anymore. You know, it's bordering on entertainment news now, and I just can't watch that anymore, you know? I mean, he was there, a truck passed by, and he had to make the comments, that was a police truck, or maybe that was another anti-terrorism truck that just passed by. Don't add fuel to the fire. There's enough fuel on the fire. It's not reporting anymore. It's almost inciting news that doesn't exist, and people are already nervous as it is, and to add on, to pile on just so your rating can go up is driving me mad. You know, but besides that...
Well, to be fair, I think our ratings would go up if we talked more Habs.
Well, you know, yeah, maybe that's true, maybe it's not true, Dave, but the reason why you set yourself apart from the rest is because you can cover a gamut of things, including the Habs, but
here.
Other things that keep people's interest. I mean, Brian Wiles on your show. I don't see Brian during the day with other people's show, just 5 minutes talking.
I'm a lucky guy.
An interview, but, you know, and Brian, by the way, it's great, the chemistry with the other two guys. Just make a mental note. Keep your Monday nights free.
Well, I know both of these guys off the air. That's why.
Yeah.
Jay lets me go to his pub every now and then.
Well, now and then. Yeah.
But you know what? It's one of those days, and we're going to have to take some time to, I guess, reflect on it. I don't know how much more security you can put in place. I mean, that's the danger of terrorism.
You can't. It's a marathon. It's about...
Yeah.
You can't put more security in place. I mean, you can do things in other places. Like you could make it a little bit safer and a little bit more difficult to get into a hockey game or a baseball game.
Yeah.
I have no issue with that.
I mean, maybe it's the reality of the world we live in. And I guess to Jay's point earlier about Twitter and people saying my prayers and thoughts go out to you, that in itself wouldn't have bothered me so much if it wasn't always followed up with a secondary tweet or a primary tweet that said, how could this happen to us? I don't think it takes much knowledge or education to take a step back and look at the world we're living in and realize these things happen all over the world. And you brought that out, this is Damascus every day.
Yeah. Yeah, that a day where 100 people are injured and 4 are killed in Damascus would be...
It's a great day.
A good day in Damascus. It's crazy to think about it that way.
And it's not to diminish what happened in Boston. It's to help everyone be sensitive to this false sense of security that we put around us. That shield is being slowly deteriorating. And so, you know, maybe it's about time, you know, everyone, including Americans especially, talk about foreign policy. Talk about the fact that you have army bases in over 100 nations, or that your army is 10 times larger than the next 10 nations combined, including almost 9, I think 9 out of 10 of your allies, and the 10th is...
Yeah, but we both know, Mike, that's not how it works. You don't have an atrocity committed on your soil. And again, you're assuming that this is something that we don't know what it is yet. But
yeah.
let's if you want to play that game for a second, then I can't imagine... I mean... Can you imagine? That would be like the opposite of 9/11. To have a calamitous event happen on your soil and then have that be a period of reflection?
You know what?
Let's spend less on war.
But you know what? It's the most interesting thing.
I mean, I'm not saying I'm not for it. I'm just saying it would never happen.
No one.
I mean, if Aaron Sorkin wrote the presidency again, then maybe.
That's right.
But not in the real world, right?
And you're probably right in the sense that even on Bill Maher's show last week, he mentioned... Does anyone remember who's the last president who had 4 years without any war? And it was Jimmy Carter, who's considered presidential anyways, the biggest loser.
Yeah.
After he left, of course, he's a hero and a speaker.
I mean, to be fair, the last day of his presidency was there was kind of a little bit of a skirmish in Iran, wasn't there?
Yeah, but it wasn't a president who actually had sent out any armies. To any
right, Vietnam had
war.
Ended. It was yeah, okay.
You know,
yeah,
and yet he's considered a loser. I mean, it's not considered American to sit back and take it.
Right, it's a sign of weakness.
That's right. It's not time to be thoughtful. It's time.
And, but again, and this is why I keep going back to the whole. I really hope this is one lone white dude.
Well, unfortunately, from what I've seen on CNN,
and I mean, I don't mean to be racist, Mike. He could be a black dude too. That's okay.
Actually, they said it is on CNN. They say they believe it's a gentleman with dark skin with an accent, of course. So.
Can it be a Jamaican accent, please? Can it, like...
Either that or the Americans. I mean, I'm surprised they didn't put a North Korean's face on it. It's like this guy.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's whoever they want to get next, right?
Let's just pray that there's some restraint and that it's not, that this doesn't become...
Even if it is what has just been said, if it's an individual...
And not a group, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even if it's the wrong religion, wrong color, and incites people, even if it's just an individual, I think it'll be containable.
Yeah,
but it's still going to lead to some asshole bombing a mosque or, yeah.
It's still containable. It's still containable if it's one person, though. It's still containable.
Yeah,
you can't.
Right.
No one in the world, or no one in America, I don't think, or there might be a couple people that would. Be troubled, but for the most part, I think people understand you can't control the behavior of every single individual in this world, regardless of ethnicity or whatever,
race, creed, color, whatever.
You cannot control an individual's behavior. If somebody wants to be the a-hole to do that,
and we saw this last year,
they'll do it.
6 months ago in New York City, a woman ran up to an Indian gentleman on the platform of a subway.
And pushed him.
And pushed him over.
Mm-hmm.
Because of 9/11, she said. And the guy was Indian. He was wearing a turban. We all know that is as much to do with 9/11 as...
Right. Wasn't a Muslim.
Exactly.
And it takes some... This is where it goes back to where Jay was right. The reflection should be in some reading and some intelligence. I mean, even some of the top guys in the U.S. who deal with anti-terrorism, they were asked... Islamist fundamentalists. What are they to the Muslim religion? He said it's basically the equivalent of the Ku Klux Klan to Christianity.
Right, or the JDL to the Jews.
Exactly.
It's not...
It is so far away from the mainstream.
Right.
It doesn't represent anybody, really, but themselves. And yet, you know, they do one thing or two things very, very dramatically, and then everyone's got to watch their back.
Yeah, because it's not how many are you, it's who can yell the loudest.
Exactly.
And
so, you know,
again,
I mean,
and we are crossing our, I'm crossing my fingers that whatever's being reported is wrong. And I mean, again, like we said earlier in the show, they arrested a Saudi Arabian 5 times today.
Yeah.
Even though they didn't. That was just the story that kept coming out and kept coming out because it's what everybody's expecting. It's like how the AP has copywritten for when people die. They have it ready to go.
That's so sad. I mean, that's where we're at, though. That's where we're at. I mean, it's tough. I mean, it's tough for that city. It's tough for everyone. I mean, even that letter that you read before or that email that you read before.
Yeah, from my friend Johnny.
Brings home a real sense of the day, whereas on TV you don't get that.
No.
You know, you don't get the reality of how it's going to affect families, even how you're mentioning. I just saw quickly that there was an 8-year-old who died, but now you have the rest of the story. It brings it home. And unfortunately, you know, individuals do crazy things. And if it is an individual by himself, it's bad enough in itself. And unfortunately, I'm not sure how you contain that behavior. I don't think you ever can. And so then you say, how do you ever stop this craziness? And so I'm not sure that the answer is within mankind's ability to stop it. I mean, I don't care how much security you do. And my wife brought up a great point. She said, it's amazing how within an hour they found all the other bags of bombs, and yet they didn't find the first one because they weren't looking for it. And the complacency sets in, and no one ever thinks it's going to happen. And then it does.
Because it's not Jerusalem.
That's
you know?
Right.
Because you don't walk into Starbucks and have armed guards at the door.
Exactly. And you know what?
And frankly, we don't want to live in that world.
That's it. And so this is the price. The price is high, Dave. It's a high price to pay.
Yeah.
You know, it's a high, like they say, it's a high price to pay for freedom, but it's their freedom at home. That's going to be a high price to pay, unfortunately. But on that note, great show as always, guys. It's good to hear Brian there as well. Jay, as always. And
out of control.
I love it. You know, I'm with you all the way. Moment of silence, I'm with you as well, too.
Thanks, Mike.
Listen.
Yeah, Mike.
Well, you know what? Sometimes, you know, there's a subculture. And, yeah. You know, sometimes you got to take a step back and realize, okay, what's really happening here?
Yes.
Is it really authentic? Or are we just buying in because we're being told to?
I guess that's why I was saying that, because whenever there's a moment of silence and I happen to be involved,
Jay,
I'm looking
yell, wake up, sheeple.
I'm looking around and I'm like, this is ridiculous what we're doing right now. I guess that's why I get so mad about it.
Yeah, but you know
it's
what?
It's so self-serving.
You sat there with that look on your face at the Gary Carter thing while there was the moment of silence going on. And next to you is me going,
yeah, it was more like,
there you go. That's the one.
But, you know, when he mentions Youppi at Center Ice, I mean, that's what has to stop.
It broke my heart, man.
That was pretty funny, actually. I have to admit, remember that.
It was ridiculous.
What's Oopie doing there?
God bless Gary Carter. You guys don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. God.
Doing down there.
Oh, I can't. I can't deal with it.
Mike, thanks so much for the call.
Great. Have a good evening.
We'll catch you next week.
You bet.
And I like that guy.
I want him to be my friend.
Aww.
I want to have.
I've never heard you say that about anybody.
I want to play like Battleship with him and have fun, like have a chess
you
match.
Go
no,
man-
he beat
you
me
wanna
at chess.
You want to go on a mandate with him?
Yeah, I want to go. I want to have a bromance with that guy.
That's cute.
I can't believe I just used the word bromance.
On the
kill
radio.
Me. Kill me.
On the radio.
I should kill myself.
Wow.
Yeah.
Brian, thank you so much for coming in tonight.
You're welcome.
That was really fun. I love,
I want to have a bromance with this man as well.
Well,
let's play Stratego.
Stratego.
Remember Stratego?
Yeah, hell yeah.
I used to love
hell
Stratego.
Hell yeah, I'm old enough for
man,
that.
Man, I could hide my spy.
Someone tell me that's a euphemism for something.
Nope.
Yeah. Nope.
As
nope,
soon as I said it, I went, was that a euphemism for something?
Nope.
That's
an actual
I said,
part
no,
of the gameplay.
I don't call it a spy.
Oh, wow. Mike Wendt, thank you so much for sharing
your
thoughts.
That's got to be a tough name to live with.
Wendt?
Yeah.
Why?
I want to finish the sentence.
Mike
Wendt here. Mike Wendt there.
Oh, you see, but Mike Wendt from Boston.
There you go. Perfect.
But I think of George Wendt, who was Norm on Cheers.
Right. Yeah. Also from Boston.
So, I don't
George
know.
George Wendt to the bar.
Norm. Hiding from Vera. Our once again... Just our thanks to Mike for joining us on a very difficult night for him. And Dan Barton for adding a little bit of levity to
Dan was awesome.
Our kindred spirits in South Florida who are...
Poor bastard.
Funny guy.
Poor guys,
he
yeah.
was funny.
He was great. I hope we can speak with him again in the future. And Brian, we really appreciate you joining us what turned into a 2.5 hour episode of The Kaufman Show.
Longest I've ever stayed away from Twitter.
Yeah, right.
Ever.
Even though I'm lying, because I think I tweeted four or five times.
I've been looking at the top of your head the whole time.
Jay, thanks.
Thank you, Dave.
And to Jimmy on the board and John Kakalakis for editing the podcast, which will be up very soon at thekaufmanshow.podbean.com in case you missed any of it. And we'll send this one out to the fine people of Boston tonight, Joel Plaskett. I love this town.
Listen up, kid. It's not what you think. Stayed out too late. Had a little too much to drink. Walk home across the bridge. When the marquee shut down, there's a reason that I love this town. Nobody cares how much money you have. If you've got enough to get in a cab, there'll be drinks on the house. If your house burns down, there's a reason that I love this town. I saw your band anyway. I shot the shit with miniature Tim. If he needs a tune, then I'll write one for him. We like the same books and we like the same sounds. It's a reason that I love this town. I played a show in Kelowna last year. Said, pick it up, Joel. We're dying in here. Picture one hand clapping, then picture half that sound. There's a reason that I hate that town. If you saw my band in the early days, then you understand. Face down in our suit, some French restaurant. I saw Riviera de Loup last night at a tour. We burnt the place to the ground. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town.
It's another Kaufman Show in the books. For Jay Farrar, I'm Dave Kaufman, and we'll be back next Monday night at 11 o'clock.
I don't know. What'd that sound like?